You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. And please send those in. We're going to start answering some of those questions. I have like 10 questions that we have to go over because we've been so focused. This is a very special episode. This is an episode where we have Greg Lenz. To my right, as always.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Oh, hold on. Your mic's not on. What the hell? All right. Try now.
What am I, a fake news source on Facebook?
Yes. I've censored you. And then the very pretty Rob Kendall. Rob, how are you doing?
It's great to be here with you. It's been a great week for America. And
your Cubs won.
The Cubs won. The God Emperor was victorious. Stock market through the roof, oil down.
Mike Pence holocausted a bunch of lobbyists from the transition team.
He sent them back.
Yeah. Wojak got mad.
It's really great. I mean, it's everything Lenz and I knew it would be, even though you did everything you could to stop it.
I did.
And no one is enjoying Trump's victory more than Chris Spangle.
Oh, my God. We'll get into Spangle. He has been very fair since the election.
Fair isn't even close.
I mean, I will say
he has been more partisan than you and I were for the entire year combined.
But we said this for a long time. Spangle sees a lot of himself in Trump. I don't think he wants to admit it, but he sees a lot of himself. And I think you will find Trump to be a very moderate president. I think you're really going to like him.
I agree. I think that he will actually be a moderate person.
What Spangle likes is he has free license to go around cracking the eggshells of the weak and safe space inhabitants.
Yeah, because you hate the safe space people.
It's not that I hate them. It's just I hate censorship and I hate shame. And there's a lot of people right now in society who are all about shame and censorship because they're butthurt that they lost. I have to admit that I have really enjoyed the liberal tears.
Yeah. I'm almost at the point like I'm overhydrated. I've drank so many liberal tears. My very dying thirst is now quenched and I'm like
can we move on to issues?
I was like, all right, now I'm ready to see how Trump does.
Isn't it fascinating though the backlash? And you would say to the average person, what are you upset about? Like what maybe if you're a Muslim American, you're slightly worried. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, I would be. Yeah.
Would you really be worried
when your transitions team starts talking about making a Muslim registry? Yeah, that's concerning.
We have no idea what the transition team is actually talking about, though. At this point, I mean, that's the news media.
It's a campaign.
They already monitor like the Occupy movement, and like a federal judge just required that the FBI and the Department of Justice release like their findings, like the. Who they're spying on in the Occupy movement. And like I'm sure the Libertarian Party is being monitored by some government entity.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You know, so it's not like Like, yes, they're counting them and putting them in a database, but we're already counted.
That's why they have
Chloe. We have an NSA agent in our chat,
that's
probably.
That's why Chloe Anagnos is around.
Yeah.
If anybody were the informant to the FBI, it'd be Chloe Anagnos.
Oh, she'd sell you guys down the river for...
Oh,
but you're right. If it were WWF, it'd be Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Nice would be the turncoat.
You'd never imagine. Yeah. You can't imagine that it's Nice.
No.
Nice would be the guy that sold it. By the way, he did so great on the show.
He's an impressive guy.
He's already talking like Trump. He did that little hand thing, that little weird hand.
I've started doing it all the time.
Yeah.
I had somebody come on the show the other day, and they actually said, they said, you're not so bad for a Trump supporter. And I said, loving Trump is fun. It's great.
Watch when he wins even bigger next time.
I mean, it is a party. That's why we wanted you to be a part of it, Chris. I know you did everything you could to attempt to sabotage.
Of course.
You were trying to manipulate video at the rallies, accusing Trump supporters of being bad people.
Anything. That was actually happened.
You were lying about sexual assault, which was devastating.
Not a lie.
Turns out it wasn't. You know what I mean? It turns out, in hindsight, none of it worked.
None of it mattered.
It didn't matter. And you, I know it's hard for you because you loved Gary Johnson. It was a great governor.
Sure.
And probably a little disappointing as a candidate.
Ish.
And the guy he picked was a total zero.
Total.
Yeah.
Get him out of here!
When you endorse the Democrat, you're a total zero as the vice presidential nominee.
But we wanted the libertarians to do well, even those of us that were Trump supporters, because we need a third alternative to keep the primary two parties accountable, because you know it's going to be silly season from the Republicans in Congress.
I never really heard too many Trump supporters bash Johnson. That was the one thing that I always found interesting, is it was, they never really said a negative thing about Gary. When I did hear a negative thing about Gary, it was, you know, usually from the blue collar left that did end up crossing over and voted for Trump, but it wasn't Trump's Republican core.
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting into politics way too early. We're 5 minutes in and we're talking like...
Isn't that what you guys do here?
Issue? No, we screw around for the first 20 minutes. So
people look to you now. You have thousands of followers.
I know.
So many.
I don't know about Greg, but like, there's some heat after the election.
Yeah.
Man, people are paying attention.
Are people really... See, usually after the election, everybody goes away.
No.
When someone wrote on a Facebook... as a Facebook comment on my profile picture that I should be nominated for a Pulitzer, I was like... I think there might be some problems with that committee when they vetted me. Like, they might see a hitspiration and be like, is this a joke?
But think about, we talked with Nice about this, the rise of the anonymous media, I guess that's what we call them.
Is the democratized press.
Yeah. Has really been buoyed by somewhat mainstream guys like yourself. I mean, you're not CNN, but you're out there, you identify yourselves, you talk about serious issues, and it's made you guys more relevant, because you say, look, if some guy in an Ecuadorian embassy can bring down the United States government, these guys out here who have these views that were previously maybe a little out of the mainstream, they're not that far off.
Alex Jones is vindicated in a lot of ways, and I would have never guessed that he would be relevant or a part of the national dialogue.
It truly is odd. Like, I was watching him the day after the election, and I'm sitting there like, what does he do now that he's in power? Yeah. Well, like, Alex Jones never expected his playbook on how to be successful as a media person is built on being an outsider. What do you do when you're an insider and you can call Steve Bannon?
But here's the deal. Alex Jones is a crazy person, and we all know that, on 90% of the stuff, right?
Yeah. If you take him at what he says,
sure.
Is he actually crazy? Maybe. Is he actually doing it as an act? I can't figure it out.
He's infotainment.
He is. And he's the, remember on the X-Files, used to be the lone gunman?
Right.
They'd go see the lone gunman. Like 90% of the stuff, the shooter on the grassy knoll, all that sort of stuff, that's out there.
I believe that, actually.
I know you do. I mean, even though it's been disproven time and time and time again, you want to believe that Kennedy was not taken out by Oswald.
I think the CIA did him. I think they did RFK, and I think they did MLK, and that was all at the behest of LBJ.
So much with the alt-right that you never knew until now.
If you look into LBJ, and I have the documents. He's a monster.
Yeah, he is. If you've watched House of Cards, that's who Frank Underwood was based off.
LBJ.
LBJ.
Did he throw some people into the train tracks?
He's the kind of guy that would. He used to throw his Stetson out, the hat out into the crowd, and then would make sure that to pay a child to go and get it back for him.
Yeah,
like nothing. There was never an election that he didn't know the outcome of before he went into it.
If you think that, and this is sort of the argument that, and we'll talk a little bit about this later, but. but because I have a gift for Rob.
It's very exciting. I love gifts.
I have a special gift for you.
And I, by the way, I want to let you know I've told God Emperor Stav. I've not talked to the God Emperor personally.
Okay.
But I told God Emperor Stav. I had a long conversation with one the other day. I said, spare Spangle. I said, he still can be one. He's a very intelligent guy. Adds a lot to public dialogue. And I said, you know, Lens without Spangle just doesn't work. So I said, we've got to keep Spangle around. So you're going to be fine.
Ebony and Ivory.
You're going to be okay. You're going to be all right.
So I have a gift for you. I know it's been a hard week. You have a black eye.
I did. I got in a fight with a Clinton supporter.
Well, you know what, though? It means you learned because you only have one.
That's right. I won. I won.
You should see the other guy.
I went all American Dream, Dusty Rhodes on him. A couple elbows. Elbow drops off the top rope. And
Rob is shot out of a cannon. He hasn't stopped talking since he sat down.
It's very exciting because on my show, I gotta be nice to people.
You get here and you get to be mean to me.
That's right, exactly. I get to let it fly.
I don't know if we've been together since the last time. The last time you were here,
it was very heated.
It was very heated, and I got so many like, do you and Rob hate each other?
Wall thing triggered you in a way that you don't get triggered
no,
by.
No, what triggered me is that he was lying. He's a lying liar who lied about...
You mean like somebody who lies about rape?
No.
Sexual assault? Someone who fibs to try to push a political agenda?
Rob, when you're on tape saying that you grab women by the pussy, and then 12 women come out and say he grabbed me by the pussy.
Spangle, it was physically impossible. Back me up here.
Retracted, and now Gloria Allred and the main accuser have went and did a press conference where they said, please don't sue.
Okay, unless he was literally an octopus. Unless he literally was an octopus.
One of 12.
No, these are different.
The lady on the airplane was disproven by, according to Trump, by some sex offender from Britain, okay?
Hey, look, here's the bottom line. It was all made up. It was very obvious it was made up. And the American public, I think if there were somebody who really sexually assaulted women, would not have elected that person.
So Rob Kendall.
They did in the 90s twice.
Well, that's true, but I think we learned our lesson.
Rob Kendall came on the show and said that Gary, you know, was open borders, which he was clearly not, and no matter how often I showed him the truth, he was very upset and mad about it.
The American people were with me.
Sure. So I have a gift
for you. People want the wall.
But listen, it's time for us to come together.
This is so great.
Libertarians and Republicans, it's a time of peace. We're going to have our beer summit right now, if anybody remembers that reference.
This is great, because I'm soon going to be kicked out of the Republican Party, likely, for agitation.
Yeah. Well, you're the sand in the Republican Party's vagina, as I am the Libertarian sand.
Because, man, have I been spiking the football on these people for the past week.
That would be incredibly dumb, because you're like the one person that has any access to the national...
Well, that's true, but look, we're dealing with the Republican Party here.
Yeah, but that's true.
No, it's fine. I think everybody's come around. Anyway, back to my gift.
So I have a gift.
Oh, great.
All right, I'm presenting you with a Goodwill gift so we can begin to heal our relationship.
Oh, God bless you.
And I am, instead of
being... Is this a water and sewer credit from the town of Brownsburg?
It is. Nobody gets that reference. It is a pen from the Indiana Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
Oh, my gosh.
From the ceremony today.
Oh, my gosh.
This is an official Hall of Fame pen.
Oh, my goodness.
That is the closest you will ever get to the Indiana Radio Hall of Fame.
I want to let everybody know, can I do a quick play-by-play of this fabulous piece of merchandise?
Absolutely.
Did Tom Griswold hold this pen?
No, he did not.
There's no...
No.
Because I will never get my interview with Tom Griswold.
I've asked three times, and he moves right along.
Does he decline? Does he say no?
Tom is a... He just doesn't respond.
This is a fabulous pen. It says IBA on it, IndianaBroadcaster.org. Spangle also got me a program.
Yep.
I'll be taking these home and keeping them in great comfort.
Fellow radio nerd.
It's very wonderful. Now, I will tell you, did you tell him I got Trump?
I don't think that would work in your favor.
Well, but it's a big name. I'm not saying maybe politically.
No,
that would work against you.
Really?
It's my day job. They don't do interviews.
Right.
Because they're on the radio.
That's NBD.
For? Right.
They used to do interviews.
Well, they did. But then, you know, now they're on Mount Olympus. They don't need you.
Because the other day there was a guest I really wanted to get, and he was sort of going back and forth. He's a somewhat known name from the 80s and 90s. And it was him hawing, and then I said, well, I got Trump. And immediately was
That's interesting.
Let me know. Yeah. He's a great childhood hero that I think I'm going to get to interview. So
Casey Commander.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, this is fabulous.
You're digging up Ronald Reagan. And I want to sit in there like Weekend at Bernie's.
I want to thank you so much.
Cowboy Bob is dead.
He did die.
All right. So thank you to Rob for being here. Rob is our resident Trump apologist. You can go back and listen to his interview with Trump in the feed, his interview with Gary Johnson that he did.
Wouldn't it be cool if we all got those someday?
What?
Then we could do our shit posting at our induction ceremony.
Yes. Now,
but it raises a good question, which is this media outlet right here talks to thousands and thousands of people. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the list of people that are in that went into the Hall of Fame this year. And it's sure. a great group of people in previous years. But you guys are arguably talking to more people on a weekly basis than some of these broadcasters did on their local stations.
The morning talk show guy here in town, we talk to more people per episode sure. than he does in his average quarter hour. There's no doubt about it.
It's an ever-changing field. And I actually... interviewed a woman today, very interesting. Her name is Shay Smock. She used to be the MC for the Indians, and she now does a law blog. Very lovely, great. She'll be my guest Monday, WIRZ, WIRZ.org. And we were talking about that, about how media has changed. And I was kind of talking to her about you guys in particular. And I said, These guys are doing thousands of people a week sitting in their kitchen doing a podcast. And
exactly.
I said, she said, absolutely. It's the medium has changed.
Yes.
Yeah. The monetization hasn't caught up. That's the dilemma.
But all it right. will.
So let me, I need you to be quiet for a minute.
Shut up. I'm silent. I'm going to look at my program here.
Here, you look at your program. Let me set up the show. He's just shot out of a cannon. He came in here and he's so shot out of a cannon.
This is what happens when high energy is unrestrained. He's a man of action.
So I would say that after the Trump victory, there's a lot of people who are just feeling giddy. Like there's a lot of unrestrained everything. Testosterone, pussy grabbing, excitement.
It's free license for both sides.
Yeah.
Like both sides have free license to either wallow in shame and go and protest and take money from George Soros for $15 an hour and to show up. And the other side feels it's like hitting or keeping somebody restrained forever. And
yeah.
then everything, every dark element of their personality comes out when elation comes out too.
You can't
yeah. bottle it because it feels so good.
I was talking to my therapist about Trump for like a good 15 minutes of our session because because he won by such a big margin, it left an impression on me that I've really been thinking a lot about this past year. And it started with Austin Peterson. It started with seeing Austin go in, and I had this impression of him as a troll, an internet troll. He was over the top. He was undignified. And I took a very beltway-oriented view of it and just was like, oh, he'll never do. We need Gary Johnson. And then we met Austin, and we talked to him, and it was like, holy shit, this guy's us running for president. And I saw how well he did in the style in which he conducts himself.
Should've picked
McAfee. Austin, you know... Everybody doubted him, and he, through sheer force of will, you know, he didn't nearly win, but he totally set himself up to be the front runner.
He should have finished fifth. He should have finished fifth in the voting to be, you know, the Libertarian nominee.
Yeah.
And he made it go into a second ballot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's impressive for somebody whose greatest accomplishment is, you know, one of the best libertarian news sites and political analysis websites on the internet.
Prisonplanet.com.
The Libertarian Republic. Like, it's very thoughtful. And then at the same time, though, he was able to, you know, he actually is probably less libertarian than Johnson, but by being strategic about where he picked his battles, he was able to turn Gary's very, very limited negatives and exploit them into bake the cake. That
yep.
became, you know,
it was not a mortal wound, but it was a big scar.
It was. And I mean, that is who people who didn't even really know much about Gary Johnson, that is kind of what they the message that came with him. That was sort of the connotation that followed him was, oh, he's the guy that wants to force Anne Frank to bake the Nazi cakes.
Isn't it interesting, too, and you guys are obviously more entrenched in libertarian philosophy, but I joked about pick McAfee if you want to win,
mm-hmm.
but literally it's now become insurgent warfare on the political spectrum. It's not this person was a great governor. It's not this person was very pragmatic as a U.S. senator. Now it's literally trench warfare, and as you've seen, maybe – and Austin Peterson is the better approach because he is a better internet troll.
Yeah, and it also is, I've been called a racist 3 times since Trump's been elected. And I think that...
Was it by Harry?
It was not by Harry, although Harry should, like, to be honest. We joke with Harry like we would anybody else. You know, we joke with him, and so, you know...
He's more racist than both of us combined.
Oh, God, yeah. But I've had, in several instances in the past couple weeks or week or whatever it's been, you know, trying to make a thoughtful point and then having my point dismissed by, well, you're just a white straight male. And today, you know, a photo of the staff of my day job where we're accepting a Hall of Fame award, one of the highest honor you can accept.
We weren't invited.
Here in the state of Indiana for our industry. And it's all white people. And of course, some liberal guy just replied, diversity, ? And it's just like, you know, back in the 1980s when the staff was being assembled. It's like,
let me tell you about the Weimar Republic, but when you were too mean to the white kids.
Right. You're just sitting here shoving identity, politics, and racial issues right into a celebration of something that is an achievement.
But isn't it interesting? You are a cartoonist now, apparently. You're a great cartoonist.
I am a cartoonist, yes.
But I watched that the other day, and I laughed because you and Greg are so well thought of by many people because you don't take any shit from anybody.
Sure.
And you're willing to go spar with anyone, including my father, which is hilarious.
Yeah. I'd love to sit down with your dad, but I think when he says, you know, you're a seventh grader, it's funny to me because he doesn't get it.
Dad's the sort of man that has the loaded gun on the kitchen table when you walk in the house, even when no one else is there. But
trust but verify.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point that I'm trying to get to is you guys don't take any shit from anybody. Right. And if somebody attacks you, you're going to attack them back. It's no different than I'm testifying at a public meeting and a councilman accuses me because I'm a renter of not paying a water bill. Well, you're going to get it shoved back in your face, buddy, because the people in power don't dictate the narrative. And that's why people like you guys, because you don't let the people in power or the liberal elitists dictate the narrative anymore.
Well, so this is what I was talking to my therapist about. It's like, so it started with Peterson, and I started noticing that, and I kept listening to Greg talk about it. And personally, as I've, you know, trying to be more true to myself, publicly, privately, there is no Hillary Clinton in me. I'm the same publicly that I am privately. And I'm not afraid to show those complicated sides of myself where I can be an asshole. I can be mean. And I can say things, you know, Maya and I were talking the other day. She's like, yeah, sometimes you really hurt my feelings. I'm like, fuck off. You don't have feelings.
You walked into his apartment for a Christmas episode with an unloaded AK-47 or an AR-15 that we all thought might have been loaded and scared the hell out of people and physically assaulted you.
Right.
Her feels can take a walk.
Right. Yeah. Glass jimmies. But
think about your diversity. But you're able to do this show and interview her, which is...
Sure. Sit down and have compelling conversations with Maya. And if you take this season of Creating Maya, which is a podcast that we do, you know, we're her and I are kind of on the same track in terms of self-discovery and self-acceptance. And you think this way for so long, you think these cognitive distortions about yourself, about society, about the way things are supposed to be for so long, and then you just let go and say things can be a different way. And that can be a scary thing, and it's tough to kind of get your... And there's probably once a month where I message Greg. I'm like, did I go too far? Is this what normal people do? Am I crazy? You know, show me to myself, you know, because Maya and I actually have a lot in common. It's just I've always been the buckled down, laced down person, and I like Maya because Maya is the joker side of myself. You know
but
what I mean?
Think about you have a transgender person who you've not only done a show with, which you deserve a credit for doing that. You've created a literal series with something that 5 years ago even was so taboo.
Right.
Nobody would touch it.
Own community doesn't touch them still.
Right.
When we sat down and started doing that podcast, I didn't share it on my Facebook. And I'll be quite honest, just because it was so taboo, and now it's so much more accepted. The first time I ever heard the word cis wasn't in a joke and a meme. It was Maya and I talking about labels and trans people. But, you know, we have, not because we want to fill quotas, but we have Harry, who's a black person. He's our friend. We have Maya, who's a trans person. She's my friend.
No, I have a great deal of respect for Maya. I don't give free passes for bad behavior.
Right. And I used to. I don't.
Law and order libertarian.
Right. No, it encourages. It's a moral hazard.
Right. And so for three...
I'm an economics nerd.
Well, for 3 years, I've had Greg saying, you know, you got to stop giving people chances. You got to stick up for yourself. And I'm like, but. And finally this year, I was just like, nope. I'm going to be an asshole. I'm going to set boundaries, and it's been the best year of my life as a result.
But you think about what you do, and then you think about the work Greg does online, and I use work in the kindest of senses, but you think about there are people that are directly affiliated with the Republican Party, like higher up people mm-hmm. who probably have Mike Pence's number on speed dial, who now embrace Greg's work. Like, they're flattered to be memed by yeah. Greg Lenz, and I don't know, because I've just really started to get to know you guys for the past couple of years. I bet 3 years ago wouldn't have touched you with a 30-foot pole.
Sure.
No, I mean, yeah, I am not the best of I'm not a consensus builder in parties. So political parties, I don't really fit that well.
But you also weren't that way 3 years ago. Now, I mean, what we have built is this little, like, Joker colony of misbehaviors, juvenile delinquents that have kind of unleashed on each other. The match that lit the torch was when we started a Facebook chat with Aaron Tad and James Neese.
Tad Western is my favorite name of all time.
Mm-hmm. And in person, he's the most calm and docile individual on the planet. Yeah. So it's shocking that his antics are so outside the bounds.
And we would like, oh, I don't know if we should put this in a group chat. And now it's like, it's guy culture, and it's outdoing each other and who can come up with the best joke. And so my day job is that, my friends are that, and now I'm to the point where I'm like, what is normal?
Yeah, you have to balance it, because it is, you know, what it moves your inner compass so far.
Yeah.
You know, that you have to be like, oh, when I post that Hitler thing, they don't know that I'm joking. I'm not actually sure. A white supremacist, and I don't think that, you know, the Atlantean Nordic race is genetically superior, and that's what we should use eugenics in order to morph us into.
Right, but I'll tell you, never have more people been watching us.
No, I mean, yeah, and you know, for me, I hate to say it, but, like, you know, it's always been something like, how do you get noticed today?
Right.
You know, and then the second time, this is hard. Like, liberty's hard. Republican, yep. Like, conservatism's a harder sell than being on the left.
Right.
Like, spreading your message when it isn't all, you know, having group cries at college campuses or having safe spaces. And when it's, no, listen, what's hard is good. And yeah. We need to be serious, and we need to be adults. And that means we can't have everything we want right now, so that there's something for people coming after us. That makes it harder. And yet it has to be fun too.
Sure.
Just because it's such a tougher, it's a tougher sell and a tougher movement to build and gain momentum, doesn't mean you can't have a blast doing it. And that's what's been missing.
And you think about how many people will hear this podcast. Thousands of people. I mean, because you guys have thousands of subscribers. Mm-hmm. You assume people that are subscribing are listening. Why would they be subscribers?
Well, there's like multiples of people who listen versus who subscribe.
Sure, absolutely.
Honestly.
So you think about, like, one of the compelling things, like, take a Bruce Springsteen. It was, hey, this guy was the voice of the voiceless. Like,
right.
This was the connection to the world. Darkness on the Edge of Town was for every dude that worked on cars late at night or lost his girl or whatever. This is like the voice of the voiceless, but it disseminates instantaneously, and it's almost in a political sphere where people say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm not even a libertarian, but I also really think my government is totally corrupt and has let me down, and these guys speak for that, and you instantaneously push that information out to people.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. We have an audience survey on our website at the bottom on the right side hand if you want to take it, because it helps us kind of understand who we're talking to. A lot of people use that for advertising, but we don't do advertising. We ask that if you get something out of this podcast, go and chip in some money, which I'm about to read something from somebody that's great. But
hey, by the way,
yes,
there's
sir?
A small animal in Brownsburg, Indiana, that once again wanted to make a donation to We Are Libertarians. Bruce Kendall, who is,
yes.
He's on the website, right?
Oh, no, Bruce is not on our website,
he's the password.
He is the password to the Wi-Fi, so
right.
You are hearing anything that goes out through the walls of the We Are Libertarian compound must pass over BruceNet.
Yeah, so Bruce, before he left...
Have a good night at amateur night, huh?
Yeah.
getting those ones out.
There, bro.
Bruce, before he left, Bruce had a little problem today with chewing on daddy's personal property.
I saw his Facebook status about that. I wondered if it was not
Bruce,
Cubs
Bruce
related.
Had a little issue, so before he he got grounded, and he kept trying to communicate with me, and then finally before I left, we had a long talk, but he said, Daddy, I want to donate my usual donation allowance to We Are Libertarians. So
oh, well, that's
Bruce,
very kind
Kendall,
of you.
That is
don't
the
be
Bruce
too hard on him.
Yeah, so
we can be bought.
And tell him that as an honor to his donations, we have named the Wi-Fi. He's part of our password.
He's very excited.
He's the gatekeeper.
He is. He's the bulldog. So I want to read something because you're echoing kind of what we're talking about. So anyways, the survey that I was talking about, it shows that the majority of our audience makes between $80,000 and $140,000 a year. It is mostly people with master's degrees and PhDs. It is mostly people who are 25 to 45. They are people who are successful. They are people who are just politically homeless. And it's not neckbeard basement-dwelling libertarians. It's accomplished people who are intelligent, who think, who want to find an alternative, that listen to this program. And that's great. I mean, we love that because that's exactly who we are. I don't have a college degree. Which I think I've probably taken a little too personally some of the media coverage.
Does it bother you?
No, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is
that he could have taught history at the school he took history at.
Exactly. When I was sitting in history...
not kidding.
No,
swear to God.
I was sitting in a history class at IUPUI, and the professor was like... And so John Marshall was the first Supreme Court justice, and I raised my hand. I was like, actually, it was John Justice or John Jay, not John Justice, but John Jay. John Justice is a...
Ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Founding father.
Right. But it's that doesn't bother me, but I sit there and I look and I go, okay, I'm part of the white middle class that has no college degree. I didn't vote for Trump, but I'm being portrayed as a toothless bumpkin by the liberal media as they try to desperately understand why Trump lost, you know, and it's just irritating.
Yeah, that's a false identifier. You know, that's not a good way to categorize people.
Right.
You know, because the best education you can get is to continue it forever.
Yeah.
You know, education doesn't stop once they, you know, put your name and fake sign a piece of paper.
I have 95 library books sitting on the table behind you guys.
I mean, you're probably a priest, too.
Yeah. So,
I mean, you went to Harvard. You got the Harvard collection.
I want to read something, and I want to find his name because he's actually a contributor now, and he's okay with me.
This is from Maury from West Chicago.
This is, yes. This is from Larry Daniels, who will be...
Who's no fan of you.
No. I was listening to Rob's show that will air on Thanksgiving. He gave me a preview. My buddy Larry, Larry Daniels, American Patriot, look him up on Facebook. He's a Trump supporter, not a fan of yours truly. All right, so let me read this. My name is James Darling. I am a senior engineering student at Oklahoma State University. So clearly a toothless white dummy. Senior engineering student at Oklahoma State University. Wanted to send you this email to let you know about and thank you for the impact that you and all the folks at We Are Libertarians have had on me over the past 6 months. If you don't mind, I'd like to share a little of my experience with you. Earlier this year, I would have described myself politically as a constitutional conservative. I voted in the Texas Republican primary for Ted Cruz, kind of cringeworthy looking back.
Lying Ted!
I read a lot of Mark Levin. My dad and I have a running joke to stand and salute every time someone says the name Tom Landry or Ronald Reagan. Even though I was hesitant about their official policies towards the LGBT community, I thought the Republican Party was the way ordinary people could take back the government and make it smaller. And then the GOP went and nominated your favorite orange windbag. Sorry, Rob. I absolutely despised Hillary Clinton and her corruption and couldn't stomach Donald Trump. So in May of this year, while attempting to avoid studying for finals, I Googled the Libertarian Party and found Gary Johnson. I remember sitting in the library on campus thinking, wow, a successful former governor who balanced his state's budget actually wants to shrink government and doesn't hate gay people? Sign me up. I had heard libertarians were crazy, but Gary Johnson seemed like a smart, caring, responsible leader I could vote for. He made me want to research more about libertarianism, and that's how I found We Are Libertarians. I loved your show from the get-go. It was really informative as well as funny and entertaining, a lot more so than Levin's show. I would listen a lot driving to and from work over the summer as well as on long road trips. I especially liked your episodes with Richard and Jerome. That's episodes 160 and 163. I hadn't really given much thought to the drug war and criminal justice reform, but Wall completely changed my views. I couldn't believe how much my silence on the Republicans' Law and Order campaign has affected millions of nonviolent criminals, quote-unquote criminals, many of whom need help, not a jail cell. You guys have also challenged my views on immigration and foreign policy, and while I may not be at the libertarian mindset you guys are yet, I'm getting closer every day. I used Wall as a springboard to reading Murray Rothbard and Ron Paul. I also found Lions of Liberty, Roger Paxton of the Lava Flow podcast, and Tom Woods at the Tom Woods Show. We also recommend Johnny Rocket Launchpad. I've tried to learn more and more every day, and I finally feel like I have a political home where I have to put my reservations about the GOP's stances on issues like gay marriage and drug policy to the side. I feel like I finally have a political home that is actually about liberty on all issues, not just a select few. And it is all thanks to We Are Libertarians, well, We Are Libertarians and Gary Johnson. I've told a lot of my friends about the show, which is what we desperately need you to do, and what I'm learning, and I even convinced three of my friends who felt the same way, two from the right and one from the left, to vote for Gary. The impact you've had goes well beyond me. Thanks again for all the laughs and all of the knowledge. I will never look at liberty or helicopters the same way. If there's a way that I can start giving per episode, let me know. I'd love to give it back for what you have given me. And so James went to WeAreLibertarians.com and scrolled down to the right-hand sidebar and signed up for Patreon, where he is now donating $1 per episode. So the more content we give him, the more money we make. So Rick Irvine gave a contribution this past week, and we use that money to then promote the show, to build infrastructure, to pay for the hosting cost for things like SoundCloud so we can expand our reach, and that's what we use the money for. This is this is not free. It comes out of my pocket, Greg's pocket, you know, and
Bruce Kendall's pocket
now. And the people that donate to us, we are very grateful to all of you who donate. I'm a terrible fundraiser. I always have been, always will be. But if you get something out of the show, then please go donate so then we can use that to spread the message. And I think what you're seeing in that email is that people are hungry for a different alternative, and they're not being fed by the mainstream media. They're not really being fed by their echo chamber on Facebook, unless somebody like us is an interrupter and breaks that echo chamber. They're interested in different information. And I think you're 100% right, Rob, because what this show does, what Jason Stapleton, what even a Breitbart or The Blaze or The Daily Caller or Red State or Drudge or even Alex Jones to, you know, some extent, all of which have been put on a ban list by a professor that was published in the LA Times saying these are information outlets that are not credible, they are not to be listened to, and they should be banned from Twitter and Facebook.
My favorite news outlet, Zero Hedge, was on that list,
Zero
and
Hedge.
I couldn't believe it.
The Daily Wire, which is Ben Shapiro, who was as anti-Trump as they come.
Town Hall, I'm sure, was on their Red State.
Yeah, then and including a site that we used to be a part of, libertytalk.fm, which is a news talk outlet. LouRockwell.com was on there. So the left wants to silence voices because they lost. They don't want to sit there and go, hey, we need to change our game. We need to do something differently. No, they're going to put Keith Ellison in charge, who is
you might as well put Van Jones in charge of the DNC.
Exactly right. He's a progressive community organizer.
Left-wing Alinsky radical.
A Muslim, Rob.
He'll be registered, that's for sure.
That's right. We'll know where he's at all mm-hmm. times.
So
when he goes home, they know.
They don't get it. And so Howard Dean's also running. And what is fascinating to me is Howard Dean in 2004, when he ran, was this crazy, scary, progressive, socialist liberal. And now he's to the right of Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Keith Ellison.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Democratic Party is really in trouble, because if Trump is the populist and follows through with an agenda that represents his message, the majority of America, as long as the economy is doing well, is going to have no other option to vote for, because there won't be a way to distinguish between the Democratic candidate and
right.
Trump.
It's really interesting too. That letter is so compelling, and it's really great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really, all joking aside, it really shows somebody took that much time. I mean, that's the sort of letter I used to like I would write to the Ultimate Warrior when we correspond back and forth. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's a hero letter.
Right.
I mean, it's something you write to somebody who has profoundly influenced you. It's not, hey, your guys' show is great. Keep up the great work. I mean, that's somebody telling their personal story to you. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I'm always envious of you guys because I have to sit down each day and I have to interview somebody. And mm-hmm. I let them tell their story. But it's on the guise of mainstream media. It's traditional FCC-governed airwaves. So there are limits to what we can do. And it's 30 minutes in and out. You guys each week get to tell this story. And you don't have any barriers. And sure. It's really, you know, the last frontier. I mean, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
This is radio nowhere. Is there anybody alive out there?
No, and I work in commercial radio, and I can tell you it's a very complicated place because even though we have a very free situation, there still are a lot of concerns. You've got to worry about advertisers.
Your advertisers are your overlords.
You look at what happened to Rush Limbaugh. The stuff that happened when he called the one girl a slut.
What was Sandra Fluke.
Sandra Fluke.
Or Fluck was her actual name, I think.
What happened is a series of no-buys. And so all the left organized and is very good at organizing. And organized,
horny for a boycott.
Horny for a boycott.
Always horny for a boycott.
And built on their blogs, like Daily Coast, like Fire Dog Lake, like the Crooked Liar, I think it is Crooked Liar, on Truth Dig, on the Huffington Post, all these sites.
Snopes,
right? But all these sites that the right has built over the last 10 years that they now want to shut off of social media.
Whoa, you don't get a play too.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's repressive toleration.
Right.
It's what it's always been.
And so what they did is they organized and they listed all the sponsors and they said, here are all the sponsors of Rush Limbaugh. Here are all the sponsors of Mike Savage. Here are all the sponsors of Fox News. Here are all the sponsors of this, of this, of this. And they started doing mass phone calls. They took their political tools that they use for campaigns and they put them to boycotting advertisers. And it doesn't matter if it's the same 50 people calling 100 times a day. To an advertiser, what they hear is thousands of people. Even if an advertiser gets one phone call, you know this, Rob, working in that industry, you get one phone call, they go, oh, there might be a problem. We better start the phone chain. And it goes this. And advertisers are very quick to flee. And so what you want to do is you want to build relationships. You know, it's like any media or any business, a relationship can withstand more than a fleeting buy.
Which is a misread of the global marketplace anyway.
Right.
Because the day of being well thought of by everyone and vanilla and acceptable guarantees that you're irrelevant.
Right. Paul, there is no Paul Harvey anymore.
No, sure. Chick-fil-A, by, you know, letting their business model be political, you know, get to a place where they didn't disavow the, you know, their CEO's beliefs on homosexual marriage, ended up booming.
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A is booming. Hobby Lobby, booming. They have decided to take commerce, much like Apple Computer did, and build a tribe around it, and that's their business model.
Yeah, if you remember Memories Pizza and RFRA, right. They got inundated, and they got a GoFundMe of $800,000 from Glenn Beck's
audience.
They
did well.
They mm-hmm. did. But
it's good business to find, you know, to have an enemy.
Right, but they paid a cost. South Bend Tribune by Victoria Black just recently wrote an article about them that was really interesting. But in major media, the way that major media works, and I'm not, you know, I'm talking about the industry, somebody like, let's say a client, let's say Ford. Ford goes to West Coast, East Coast, Chicago ad agency. And they say, we want to put this towards radio, this towards TV, this towards this, this towards digital, this towards blah, blah, blah. And then the ad agency then divvies all that out. And so what they will do is they will say, all right, Clear Channel Radio, which is dead, so I'll use them. So they go to Clear Channel, which is now iHeart. They say, we've got X amount of dollars for radio. Where can you place us? And they will then say, okay, well, we've got this product called Premier Radio. And so we can put you on Glenn Beck. We can spend some of your money on Rush Limbaugh. We can put some of your money on Sean Hannity. And Ford goes, the 20-something, 30-something white liberal sitting in his Chicago office is talking to the, you know, millennial buyer in Detroit. And they together go, I don't want the headache of that. okay, well, then we'll put you over here. We'll do this. We'll do this. We'll put you
on top late
four.
Night Remnant where nobody listens. That way no one can right. complain.
Right. But it is.
And so what happened is Rush Limbaugh's career is over. Here in town, the Heritage Station, 50,000 watt WIBC, it's an FM station, the most powerful talk radio station in town. They dropped Rush Limbaugh, and now he's on Premier is his carrier, and they've put him on a sports talk station on the iHeart cluster, which owns.
But the ironic thing is, it killed the ratings at WIBC.
It did.
They slit their own wrist.
You try to be all things, all people. You're nothing.
Well, but because what happened is, not only did the Sandra Fluke stuff work at the top level, at the ad agency level, it also worked on the local level.
Right.
Because they started collecting, once they got done with all the big guys, they started going to all the markets and they started saying, okay, heating and cooling service X advertises on this station, call them, give them a hassle, spend one day rattling their cage, and they don't want to buy Rush Limbaugh anymore.
Right.
And so that's how voices are silenced. And so what the left is doing now with right media sources is they are trying to paint somebody like Steve Bannon and Breitbart as this, you know, Nazi site. That basically that they are the official mouthpiece of the KKK, which just is not the case. It's not true.
They're red meat for their very conservative base. Sure. They have a business model.
But
they don't apologize
this,
for it.
You said this to me last year because I was at the time looking at whether I was going to dispatch old Lion Pete there in the Indiana State Senate, and it would have been a really easy tackle because look at the guy that won. He won like 50-some percent of the vote, and we would have done a lot better. But Chris said something to me, and it always stuck with me. He said, Rob, you can be a commentator or you can be a politician.
Right.
You can't be a politician and a commentator.
Yep.
And it's been so cathartic to be able to be a commentator. While I can't say whatever I want because I'm bound by certain restrictions, it's still cathartic to be able to go to a public meeting and some idiot councilman accuses you of not paying a water and sewer bill and then spend the next month trolling him and making him look like an idiot.
Sure.
But I'm so envious of what you guys get to do because you can say whatever you want and you're still reaching those thousands of people.
But you have the opportunity just by doing an extra 30 minutes a day and then posting it on SoundCloud.
I do, but it's so much effort to be so great at these interviews that I do. I mean, I'm physically exhausted.
I know.
Rushed us 3 hours, 30 minutes, and
so what?
I need an energy safe space.
So where we're at now is that we're in a changing environment in media because the Sandra Fluke model of the left is silencing the right, and that then hurts all the other businesses. So I work, you know, it's...
It kills the industry.
If you are connected to Rush Limbaugh's show, then they won't even buy your company.
Right.
They won't buy iHeart because they'll go to Federated or Cumulus or a local station like yours, Rob, and they'll say, we're not going to go buy from those guys. We're not going to buy from Emmis. We're going to go to Intercom. And so it just becomes a cancer. And
sports talk radio has to be the only game left in town.
That's why there's four in town. In a town like Indianapolis, we have four sports talk stations. It's stupid. And it just
too
becomes
much sport ball.
The problem with
our teams are not that good.
Being opinionated in this day and age is that you pay a price.
Sure you do.
You pay a price. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. If you take a stand on any issue, then you pay a price. And if you do that too much, then you get pushed. People want docile.
Yep.
People want conformity. And social media has accelerated that to an extreme because it's so easy to shame other people. And so for me, my evolution over this last year started with therapy, and it started with finding Brené Brown and saying to myself about a year ago, I'm just going to start being me, and I'm going to stop like faking who I am and trying to please people. I'm just going to be who I am. And there are parts of me that are the internet troll, that are the Joker. Like, there are things that I do and say that people go, that's too far. I'm like, well, you told me to be myself. You know, I mean, there are social norms, but
behind
at the same
closed
time,
doors, or like while they're sitting there behind the screen, they're like, oh boy,
that's
pop
why,
the popcorn.
That's why I love Maya. Maya is the first person in my life that said, you know, here's somebody who was living as who was a man, but felt like they weren't a man, and was trapped in a system and was very angry and volatile. And now is somebody who is mostly peaceful, but very calm with who they are. And in a 3-year period, as documented on the Creating Maya podcast, still is a sociopath, now clinically diagnosed, and is still angry, but at peace with themselves. And there's a part of me that feels that way. That's why I'm a libertarian, is I'm mad at society. But I'm also mad at the constraints that have been put on me as a man, as a person. And it pisses me the fuck off when I'm sitting there on Facebook, when I have the friend circle that I have, that I, when, you know, when on this program, when, you know how much shit I took for having Derone and Richard Samuels on because they're criminals? You know, and people going and looking and researching their record and finding out what they were charged with.
I had Richard on. I thought he was great.
Right.
He's a great guest. Very informative.
How dare you have someone like that on? Well, this is a serious issue. I sat and talked to episode 91, Rachel Wood's dad, Claude Wood. I sat and talked with him yesterday, and helped him with some stuff. And I was doing some media work, and his case has progressed. He won one suit where they proved malpractice. They proved that the prison system killed his daughter.
It was hot potato for blame.
He goes, the Greg Lenz, he called it. The guy that worked for Carize and now works for the state.
Lenz always calls it.
Yep. He's always right.
Somebody the other day said, because Brownsburg's looking at becoming a city, and right. They said, are you going to run for mayor? And I said, well, you never know. And they said, my God, if you run, you're going to have those two libertarian idiots and no one's going to want to run against you.
Yep. Because
they're petrified.
So here's where I'm getting. All right. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to, because I know I'm monologuing a little bit, but we're going somewhere, I promise. I'm sitting there talking to him and, you know, Claude didn't sue for malpractice and for civil rights to make money. It never was about that. In fact, all the money's going to the lawyers. He's going to get totally screwed by the lawyers. It was about opening up discovery and finding out the truth. And he found out that people in the prison system knew that his daughter, for 3 months, was dying of a blood disease. And 100 people watched that girl die, and nobody did shit about it.
Too expensive.
Too expensive. Not the right incentives. We can't do that. They actively hid his daughter from him. So he couldn't find out what was happening and go to the media and out them. And so that is what he had to do. He has had to stand up and say, I'm suing Corizon. I'm suing the government. I'm suing the doctors. I'm suing the ambulance. I'm suing the hospital. I'm suing everybody. And it's costing me $200,000 after a year and a half to find out the truth of what happened to my daughter. The guy didn't know how his daughter died until I sat down, read the documents to a family member that has a medical degree. A year and a half after his daughter died, that's how he figured out how she died. Because nobody would tell him anything. And he sits there and he hates Donald Trump and he hates Hillary Clinton for various reasons. But at the end, he thought about voting for Trump just because he was a fuck you. You know? And we're sitting there talking and he's just pissed. Because nobody gives a shit about what he's talking about.
Donald Trump's a very nice man. I'd like to clarify that.
So we call a media member. You know, all these investigative reporting is real hot on TV right now, Greg. So I call one of these investigative reporters, somebody that I know. If you're taking a picture of me, let me put my suspenders up so I look like a hillbilly. So I call a media member that I know that's an investigative reporter. She's like, this is about a prisoner that died.
I can't sell that to advertisers.
Here's the thing. The audience doesn't really go for criminals dying. So unless it's a really egregious thing and a really compelling story, and I'm like, it is. Sit down and talk to him. You'll like him. But it wasn't the reporter being a scumbag. It is the reporter responding to what you watch.
Which dictates what they can advertise and stay in business.
Right. So in every one of these people, Richard, Claude, me, Greg, we take shit to tell the truth, because the second you tell the truth, a government agency will send out a press release, and then there's 500,000 people that are sitting there going, you assholes don't agree with the government, you're wrong.
Yeah, and it's astroturfed. You know, that's right. The real thing is the left is no different than the right. You know, it's George Soros has been advertising $15 an hour for protesters to go and do the Trump resistance rallies. And it's there is some real sentiment. There are some real people that are scared. And there are some people that totally bought in that he is the Antichrist and he is going to start an Islamocaust in the United States. But that isn't the case. You know, anyone that's actually paid attention to him, that isn't the case at all. And the left is no more a home of diversity and toleration and acceptance than the Mike Huckabee delegation of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, it is of their accepted orthodoxy, then you are allowed to be as wild and fringe as you want. The second you step outside and say, well, maybe we shouldn't, maybe we shouldn't just start, you know, throwing people into cultural situations that they're not used to, we might want to put a few limits on that just so there isn't a huge backlash or we don't get results we're not planning for.
Sure.
Then you are a right-wing ideologue. You are a right-wing reactionary. You are Glenn Beck. You're lumped in with fringe. And it's there. The only people that are actually free speech are the libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the right isn't free speech. They are right now because they have free license, but when push comes to shove,
think of 2003.
Right. Yeah, you know, and with the FCC, like what Rob's restricted by, you know, they're not, that isn't a thing of the left.
It's really interesting now because you think about the FCC, we're in 2016. If somebody hears a curse word on the air, is it really that big a deal?
No.
I mean, it's not, but you're still governed by a very specific set of rules. And one of the things Obama has done that is really good is he's tried to save smaller radio. He's done the Community Radio Act, which created the radio station I'm on. So they have tried to reach out to recreate local radio in some level. But it's really difficult. Federal government, like anything else, is somewhat behind the times in terms of keeping up because it's clunky and
it's not an institution that's able to anticipate where the world's going. The free market doesn't know where it's going. It just follows dollars.
Yeah.
And so it's always playing catch up.
Yeah, you're right. And so radio, and we love radio, obviously, and Lenz, I know you do too.
Rush Limbaugh is the greatest troll in the history of the world.
I really worry about where radio is going because little stations like ours will always be around. And I say little, I mean, obviously we have the podcast, which is big, but community radio will always be around. But I fear where the big stations are going because they accumulated all the debt and everything, and it's been so hard, and people are now leaving terrestrial radio. And I worry about, you know, a generation from now, whether radio is going to exist in the form as we know it.
Well, I sit there and I think, you know, I'd love to, you know, at some point in the near future, pitch Greg and I as a local talk show. But we aren't going to want to do that.
Right, because does it work for you to become Rob Kendall? It doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't work
only
for you.
Only Rob Kendall can be Rob
That's
Kendall.
That's right.
You know what? When I read through that survey of our audience, the number one complaint is my mouth.
Yep.
It is the stuff I say. It is the curse words. It is the Aunt Donna moment. It is, you know, the dream about Greg where he's anally raped to death in IU. It is, you know.
Which wasn't as bad as it sounded.
Right.
progressive, was very open.
Was she hot?
But I don't even remember. I wasn't even part of it. Spangle just, you know, he imprinted that on me. He white mailed me.
But it is also the thing. It's why that guy ends the end of his thing going, you guys make me laugh.
Yep.
And we would lose that on regular radio. We would lose that by being a traditional media.
Think about this podcast, and I've kidded with people about this. You know, I grew up, quote unquote, in Broad Ripple, you know, became of age in Broad Ripple. You think about this is like going to Broad Ripple.
Yeah.
It's like a podcast of if you sat down with some dude at Kilroy's in Broad Ripple and had a conversation with him, some rando dudo, this is like the sort of conversation you would hear. But it's intelligent, it's informed, versus terrestrial radio, which is like going to, it's going to church. And it's sad because this podcast is so good. And it's so informative, but it would not work on terrestrial radio.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's going to be a slow, you know, be death by a thousand cuts for radio.
Yep.
Eventually, they'll realize, though, that the way to profitability is to be incendiary and start picking sides.
Right.
You know, once they clearly draw a line in the sand and they say, we're going to cater to it and pander to it, just like the journalism and media has had to do.
Yeah.
That's the exact same model the ones that make money are the ones that have enemies.
Yeah.
Once radio decides to have enemies and someone's not a coward, then it'll start making money again. Until then, it might as well be NPR.
Yeah, and I hope one of the things Trump does is relinquish some of the regulations that are on traditional radio, because you've got to be able to compete with the We Are Libertarians of the world. Now, I'm not saying that you should be allowed to let everybody go on there and, you know, let the expletives fly, because I think the theory is little kids maybe listen to traditional radio.
That's why it's never going to happen, Rob. It is that advertisers are afraid. And
it's
so
a utility that needs to be protected.
Even We Are Libertarians, which has limited its audience by having an explicit tag, I get complaints about saying curse words. But I understand that we all talk this way.
Yeah.
I'm not special, and if you listen to the Bad Christian Podcast, that is the best Christian podcast on the planet, and it's because those guys, not because they curse, but because they are authentic to themselves, they understand who they are, and when they're in the backstage of their Christian rock shows, they're cursing. So we're not going to insult your intelligence by giving you a false view of who we are. And so I can't sit here as a producer of a podcast and beep out all the curses, because that's not how we talk. That's not how I talk.
That's not
how you listening talk to your friends.
It's so funny, because there was a recent episode of South Park. The whole thing this year is Garrison becomes Trump.
Yeah.
And the one on election night is called Aw Geez. And there are times when you guys will be on my show, and it's funny because we say it here, and it's like, that was awesome until he fits. You guys will say stuff, and I'll go, oh geez, I don't know if I got to bleep that out or not.
Right.
But we leave it in. You guys are very good at what you do. But it's just, it's so sad, because this is where society is headed. This is where
we're at. It's where society has always been.
You're right. But
that we're being authentic and real about it.
You said something when the whole Trump grab him, you know, thing came out. And
what are you referring to? I have no idea.
I may run for mayor someday, so I've got to be very
just
careful.
Just say it, Rob.
How do you think we're going to get the woman vote?
You'll feel so good.
Better.
Say
but,
it.
But you said this, and I thought it was very insightful. You said, every man has said something similar to that, sitting around a bar table at some point, and any man who says different is lying.
Full of shit.
And any woman, 50 million women bought 50 Shades of Grey, they're not offended either.
Right.
I thought that was...
I'm offended they're sadists.
It's because
offensive.
Everybody wants to be liked, okay? So everybody wants to sit there and cry racism for their black friend, so then their black friend will think, oh man, they're down with the struggle.
Right.
But guess what? They just look at you and go, you're full of shit. Like, there is a particular word.
You damn honkies are all the same.
There is a particular word that I will not say to Harry, and it's because I won't say it anywhere else.
You'll say it to Joe.
Well, that was a different story. But, you know,
clearly remember it.
It is offensive to me. I'll tell you what offends me is some little twit sitting on Facebook calling me a racist, somebody who doesn't listen to this program clearly, who is willing to take the bullshit comments on our iTunes from people who are on the right saying, this is just a liberal podcast. They're just a bunch of progressive
losers. Yeah, we're very progressive.
Right. Because I had two quote-unquote, well, they were, one of them was a criminal. He's admitted. The other one claims innocence.
We're all criminals.
Two black guys. Two people who spent 20 years in the system going against the grain, saying that I may have messed up my life, but I'm not a bad human being. And taking shit from that, I didn't have to do that. We could sit here and we could never, ever talk about criminal justice reform.
We could literally read Human Action and interpret it for
right.
the person that
and we
isn't
can be
a libertarian.
Safe, but I would rather you understand the humanity that is behind the black men and women that are in prison and the communities that are being destroyed. I'm white. I'm white as shit. But that doesn't mean that I can't care about somebody like Daron,
mm-hmm.
who struggles. And it doesn't make me a hero, but it makes me braver than you, who's sitting there behind your little keyboard calling me a racist. And
well,
you're
hiding your cocoon.
You're not part of the oppressed classes. And well, you know what that means? I'm not a liberal. I'm not a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And if I were a Democrat, then I wouldn't be called a racist because I'm on the right team.
But you respond properly. The cartoon you drew yesterday, because I even said to you guys, I said, what is the story behind this? And then you explained it to me, and I said, that's perfect.
He was implying that
I'm
guy
not
is
take,
a cuckold.
Yeah, I'm not going to take your bull crap. And if you're going to come at me,
Bring your A game.
Then you're going to get it right back.
So as far down the rabbit hole as
because
you
my
go.
Page is my house.
So this guy, I was on my page and I made a comment, and this guy basically came out with me from some liberal bullcrap and was just basically saying, "You're a Trump supporter, you're this, you're that." And he clearly is somebody who has
is calling you right now, in fact.
Has never paid attention to me, doesn't know anything about me, doesn't listen to this podcast, and is just calling me a racist Republican. And I was like, I gave him two shots. So I give people...
You've been called a Republican several times.
I know.
And it's people have no idea what's going on.
Because it's because I am currently saying that censorship from the left is wrong. So I am a Republican. But if Republicans were censoring, then the Republicans would call me a
Democrat.
Right. And I'm just standing for truth. So I'm standing for truth. 1776 will rot again. So this guy, I give people three chances. Greg gives them one.
I do.
Right. I give people three chances. He came on. He said some dumb stuff. I challenged him on it. He came back with some more incendiary dumb stuff. I challenged him again, and I said, "Your argument is false. You're just wrong." And he came back and called me a racist Republican fat ginger. And I said,
very mean-spirited.
I am not racist or a Republican, and I'm not a ginger, but I am fat. And so he came back, and so then it was game time. So then I drew a picture of...
He was a cartoonist.
He was a...
Give you some frame of reference of why that the visual format was chosen as the proper response.
He draws graphic novels. He's a professional comic book artist, which is a revered...
He's like
artistic,
Seth Cohen.
Yeah, it is a revered artistic thing that I respect. But I said, you know what, why don't you just go run and draw your little cartoons? And then he came back, and then I said, listen, I can draw cartoons too. And so I drew a picture of him over in the corner with his dick in his hand, and then his wife bent over the bed, and then the neighbor fucking the wife.
It was a metaphorical bed. I don't believe you actually took the time to draw the bed.
Sure, I didn't.
You're a great cartoonist.
It was stick figures. And then I drew another one of me and his wife. I know. Me, his wife, his two kids, and then they were saying, "I love new daddy." And then I drew another one where she was shitting in his mouth.
Basically, it was a graphic novel of how his family fell apart.
Right. And his wife was very attractive.
Bring your game.
So
I do want to get a picture with this fabulous merchandise before we go.
And lo and behold, it was the final straw was a play from Greg Lenz's playbook.
Uh-oh.
I took a picture of him and his daughter, and I wrote the text, "Why does daddy have a boyfriend? Or why does mommy have a boyfriend, daddy?" He sent me a private message saying, "Take that down.
No
pictures of my kids." I did, and he blocked me. So, but
when?
Yeah.
He's the censor.
But that's the thing. And you know how many people messaged me and said, "That was the funniest thing I've ever seen."
Play to the audience, never the person.
Yep. So you're my mouse. All right. Well, we have to say goodbye to Rob.
I have to go be a good boyfriend.
But you're a terrible boyfriend.
Well,
that's
I am a terrible boyfriend.
That's why you have a black eye.
I balance being a terrible boyfriend with being a terrible broadcaster. I'm going to fail at everything.
Right.
But at least
that's
I balance.
True. You have a pen.
Well, I balance it. I did get a pen from the Radio Hall of Fame.
You should
here,
tell people that gave it to you when you were inducted.
Listen, you need to make a choice, Rob. You're going
to
fail.
Well, I've tried to explain this to Haley. She doesn't quite seem to understand that you can't be a great broadcaster and a great boyfriend. And it's really a balancing act, and I'm losing it both.
Hey, you've been busy lately.
Sounds like you should break up with him. I mean, her.
Did you just assume her gender?
Would you go after Haley if we broke up?
Call me.
Would you go? Would
no.
You go, would you?
Call me.
I
no,
mean,
never.
I feel like I could trust you.
Oh, absolutely. Bro code.
Call me.
Spangle, I love you, Greg.
I love you, too.
You are the best.
You are the best. You drive safe. Say hi to Haley for us and tell her we are sorry for delaying her surprise.
All right. Now that Rob's left. He can't stick through a whole episode.
Do you still feel great?
The room is less great now that he's gone.
The energy level has dropped noticeably.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He was running all over me at the beginning. I couldn't even get the show started. He was so excited. So I want to take a moment to thank Jason Doolittle. Jason is Jason and Christy Avery really are our benefactors when it comes to equipment.
They're our sugar daddies, if you will, sugar mamas.
Yeah. So we go through a lot of cords, a lot of mics, and there's a lot of equipment. We're sitting in a room probably of $10,000 worth of equipment that we've collected over the last five years.
You've been in the radio industry, and so the... Yeah. I mean, it's every bit ready to go. Is yeah. it? You just don't have the 50,000 watt.
yeah, I mean, I heard that the Breitbart radio station that what's that Kurt Schilling guy is gonna. It's actually based here in Indy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they spent a good bit of coin on it. So
now that's a model because they have a existing base and they can just preach the gospel of, you know, right wing conservatism all day.
Yep. So we'll talk about that in a second, but I want to thank Jason. He bought a microphone for us. So this microphone that I'm talking into is brand new. One of the future upgrades. We're going from lower end SM48s up to SM58 betas just to give us a little bit better sound. So I need need all the help I can get to sound good.
We're not alphas?
No. When I hear my radio voice, I'm just like, people say all the time, like, oh, you have such a good radio voice. I'm like, I am the worst. When you're listening to yourself versus like Ace Cosby from So, and he wrote this note. The fun thing about donating on our Amazon wish list, which is where I'm getting, if you want to help offset some of the cost of the equipment upgrades that we go through, upgrade our sound, upgrade our quality, and just help us replace stuff with new cords.
Pay for Facebook ads so we can grow.
Yeah, we need mic stands. That's one, the boom mic stand that I've got is great, and that would really kind of help. I have these like mic stands that you'd see at stand-up comedy that are kind of our and table stands would help us a lot. So it's stuff like that, because I do this in my living room. Like this, you walk in here and it is a libertarian podcast studio. It's not an apartment, so it's not...
It's the command center.
Not really great with chicks. they've got to be libertarian.
Well, the Trump-Pence sign isn't doing you any favor.
No, I need to take that down. That was a joke from last week. And so Jason wrote, so when you order off of our Amazon wish list found at wearelibertarians.com, he writes, you can leave a little note to us and we'll read it on the air. Dear leader, may your glorious booming voice continuously reign and reign thoughtful, concise, and insightful commentaries to the ears of all those wise enough to listen now and for all time. All hail Wall. So thank you to Jason.
Wall hail.
So, this, what we're building here is a media outlet that is a lot of what Breitbart has done is a lot of what we want to do. And in studying, we had a governor here in Indiana called O'Bannon, so I want to keep calling him O'Bannon. But Steve Bannon is, in a lot of ways, very similar to what we're trying to do. So is Trump in the way that he deals with the media. We're not outrageous. Like, I don't feel like we're outrageous.
It's a relative term.
Sure. I feel like we're just trying to be ourselves, and we do push it. There are certain things, but there's never, you know, there's lines. Like, I would never, ever mock sexual assault. I would never mock, you know, I would never be racist. Like, I think that there are funny, subtle jokes that are, you know, against any race that are funny, but it doesn't make you a racist.
Yeah, you mock the absurdity of racism in our world.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you. You know, there are lines of what we do, but at the same time, we could be a buttoned-down libertarian outlet and be like National Review and just write articles and just do the podcast and censor everything and be very thoughtful, and we could have had moderate growth like we had from 2012 to 2014, or we could entertain people and talk like people talk.
We never kept going.
No.
And I would have just, right. It would have petered out.
Yeah, because it's fun to entertain people, and what people are entertained by is something a little bit edgy, and that's how in any industry, any society, societal, you know, like comedy or politics or religion, you've got to do something new to break through the noise, and what we're doing here at We Are Libertarians is blending what you're familiar with, which is comedy talk radio with political talk radio. And yeah, you may have heard about us and we're immature and it's juvenile seventh grade memes like Rob Kendall's dad says, but then once you listen, you're impressed. So many people are saying how great episode 183 recapping the election was. It's just people tell me all the time it was great. Like, it's, but people go, all right, well, these two are funny on Facebook because they post memes. I'll give their podcast a listen. And then they go, oh, wow, they're smart.
Yeah.
There has to be surprise.
There's no such thing as stupid comedy.
Right.
I mean, I mean that's at least my opinion. I don't think you can be dumb and do comedy well. You know, anyone can luck into anything. Like, yeah, you can, there are comedians that have lucked into a shtick, right? And it's dumb, but they found their Walmart home and they can just hammer away at it. But, you know, like Conan O'Brien went to Harvard, you know,
right.
Like John Krasinski went to Brown. A lot of really smart people do comedy. You know, I'm not saying we're in anywhere near their level because they are the true, you know, professional comedians
right. And
writers. But, you know, the reason the millennial generation gets 80% of their news from the Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and John Oliver is because it's a medium where it's easy to swallow and still get enough information that you're informed and doing your civic duty.
As we've talked about, you can say something in a humorous way in three lines that will destroy somebody and be far more impactful than a five paragraph essay.
Right. You know, we don't have the attention span for we're not an essay society anymore. People don't write essays.
Yeah.
You know, libertarians cling to essays, even though, you know, it ends up being because only read by, you know, family members and then people in your online group.
It's because we revere the intellectuals in the movement.
We do. And you do need those because thought leadership is only done by a small core.
Mm-hmm.
And then it is packaged and repurposed and spread and disseminated among the tribe who can't really defend it, but they will go out there and they're sure that it's right because of the people they trust that told it to them.
Yeah, and so so for me, my personal evolution back to that has kind of been, you know, watching the Austin Peterson campaign, realizing that I needed to be an authentic person. If you never have read Brené Brown, start with The Gifts of Imperfection. It'll change your life. And just realizing that I need to be who I truly am and never apologize for it. Like, if people don't like me because I am the way I am, then those people are not meant to be in my life, as you tell me all the time. And that's sort of how we have to be politically. We have to sit here and say, listen, we can't sit here and argue with a Democrat all day long. They're just going to have open ears, and I don't have open ears. Why argue with them? You know, there is some value in arguing with those people on Facebook because other people are watching. It's the other people watching the comment thread that matter. And if you can make those people laugh, and you talk about it all the time, like, you have two choices when somebody comes at you. You can ignore their presence, and you can never engage, and you can pretend they don't exist, or
you can annihilate them and own it.
Right.
You accept it, and then you make it so absurd and just own the hell out of it and go on full-blown scale offensive that they think, oh my God, why did I poke the bear?
They're insane.
Yes, and then they don't do it anymore.
Yep.
And, you know, it's, you know, I'm not for the weapon you never have to use. I'm for the weapon you only have to use once.
Right.
You know, you use it once, and you're never threatened again, and it's because that. You know, there is a culture of, you know, society robs you of your soul.
Mm-hmm.
Society places roles on you, expectations on you, everything on you.
Yeah.
And the left weaponized it.
Yep.
The left has done an extremely good job of using shame as a tool of behavior modification.
Mm-hmm.
And they turned it into an art form with Saul Alinsky when it became ridicule. And that's exactly what you're talking about, where if you can make something funny, it is absolutely devastating as a critique.
And so now the societal standard of politics has become all of the Daily Show knockoffs.
Yep.
It is
snarky condescension all the time.
Right. And it becomes a problem for the left, because when millennials especially and the people around us on our social media start to think that that is the norm and that's how everybody thinks, there's a large population of people out there who are resenting that. And there's a large reason why there is dropping numbers on these late night TV shows. There isn't a Jay Leno. You know, yeah, Letterman was the West Coast and East Coast favorite, but there are a lot of people like us in Indiana who love Letterman. He could connect with an audience on a mass scale. Leno was more Walmart as opposed to boutique comedy. Leno was a favorite of vanilla.
Yeah, people that showed their kids VeggieTales could still show them Jay Leno.
Exactly right. And now what you have is Samantha Bee. You have Stephen Colbert,
who I despise, but right. I loved Colbert on the day, you know, right. His show.
You've got Seth
Meyers.
You've got Who else? You've got Trevor Noah.
Trevor Noah, who's going to failing. John Oliver, John Stewart. Right. You know, it's...
Jimmy Fallon is just an... You
he's
know,
a likable guy.
He has Donald Trump on, and he doesn't ask him tough questions because he's trying to fill that Jay Leno role. And that's why Jimmy Kimmel's great, is because Jimmy Kimmel's just the average guy who will ask the question like Letterman did, like Howard Stern would. That, you know, so everybody has their roles, but the problem is that John Oliver to the 4chan group has become kind of a punching bag.
Oh, I've hated him from day... I hated John Stewart, John Oliver from day one. I've always hated them and Bill Maher.
Which I've never gotten because I don't like Bill Maher.
And
but
if it was up to me, Samantha Bee would be deported.
She's not funny at all. She is terrible. But John Stewart, I always felt, had some interesting points of view. The video that he did with Charlie Rose today on this morning show... That was really interesting. But and John Oliver, I've never understood why you dislike these two, because these two are trying to poke power. I mean, John Oliver is a guy who does a lot of very libertarian-leaning pieces and does them effectively.
He doesn't, because what people don't realize is that when it's condescending and snarky like that, it is just it's the same thing as Breitbart.
Mm-hmm.
You are turning off the people and galvanizing your opposition by delivering it in that manner, by being too smart by half, by being, you know, oh, look at how witty I am.
Right.
You know, that's the problem, is it isn't relatable in any format. And so when John Oliver behaves like that, he doesn't ever attempt to even consider the opposition. It's because it is so abhorrent to accept the flawed logic of the opposition, he doesn't have a chance to understand why they believe what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes him irrelevant. It makes him a lightning rod for his people. He galvanizes support around himself, congratulates himself on how smart he is, and misses wave after wave after wave, and can never fully capitalize and be relevant on a mass scale.
But isn't that sort of what we're saying to do?
No, I do. No.
Isn't that what we're trying to do?
No, I think it's really smart what he does. Business-wise, it's extremely smart the way he is. I'm talking about, you know, if you're trying to have The Tonight Show, or if you're trying to do Jimmy Fallon, or if you're really trying to get a read on American society, he's trying to be a political commentator.
Mm.
He never has a chance to, because he doesn't give the other side even the benefit of the doubt to say, you know what, they're still people.
Right.
They may be totally backwards. They may be, completely sheltered from any type of liberal arts education, from any type of knowledge of economics or why what they believe leads to totalitarianism or censorship. But by just berating them constantly, he creates an opposite force just as strong as the one he's galvanizing on his side.
Yeah.
And so when you're trying to be a commentator, it makes you irrelevant.
Yeah.
He missed a wave. Everybody that was a snarky, condescending liberal created a backlash that is now showing up, where people don't live in fear anymore, and that can be ugly.
Yeah.
And like, it's not, it isn't as like the Democrats and the Trump resistance rallies, you know, it's being played up.
Sure.
It's being used to, you know, to monopolize and then win the midterms.
See, he's literally Hitler.
Yeah.
And then people are sharing tweets as if they are fact, like, because it fits their narrative. So half of these stories that you see on these liberal sites of, you know, my grandmother was at the store and got called the N-word. Well, your grandmother probably was going to...
She was going to get called the N-word anyway.
Trump or not, like, that person is a racist. Mm-hmm. He's not more emboldened because of Trump. He's just a racist asshole.
There is some emboldening. There is, okay. But it's not on a mass scale. Like, it's not like everybody just got a card where they could go around screaming the N-word because Donald Trump won the election and we can put people in camps.
One of our friends made the joke that, like, it was James Neese. He goes, listen, I can say the N-word now. Trump's elected.
Right.
He said it on the podcast. We had to bleep him. He's like, Trump's president now. I can say the N-word.
Right.
But he was joking. Like, it was sarcasm.
But for some people, they do feel... The people that were already that way, this was fuel.
Right.
So the angry mob that already said the N-word and still burned crosses up in the hills of southern Indiana with their closest friends, you know, that this has emboldened them, but they were already the worst among us.
Exactly right.
And just as the oppressive left, the Soviet-style left that we're seeing right now, this exposed them to their true tendencies.
Yeah.
They don't care about diversity whatsoever. They don't care about toleration. They don't care about diversity of opinion, diversity of thought, diversity of speech, diversity of anything. They preach a gospel of this is what is approved, and if you don't go along with it, then you're a racist, bigoted homophobe.
Right. And, you know, we as a podcast who Listen, people have asked me, what are you going to do with Donald Trump? And I've said, nothing right now. I'm going to wait and see. Like, I find his moral compass to be broken. I find his proposed plans to be abhorrent in certain ways to libertarian thought. But doesn't mean that he could become the greatest libertarian president of all time, for all I know.
Well, that's,
and so I'm not going to start from a position of he sucks or he's great. I'm going to start from a position of I'll see. Because that's what you're supposed to do, like, as a reasonable person.
And that's what we're supposed to do as commentators.
Right.
You know, like, we can't risk being irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know, we can't. You know, it doesn't matter how awful I consider your opinion to be. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try.
How dare
try
you?
To under. No, not yours. I mean, no, I mean, like, someone like even a social justice warrior. I'm going to try to figure out why you carry that guilt with you and you think that the government is a tool for equalization. I want to know what that thought process is like on your side and why you carry that with you, because I don't, and so I'm blind to it.
We met our first Nazi this weekend.
We did. I had a four-hour conversation with him.
And you know what? I can tell you that based on meeting him and seeing him and then hearing about your conversation with him, the idea that this person could organize a full-scale operation of genocide is so laughable.
Yeah.
Because when you meet a Nazi, when you meet a Klan member, they're pathetic human beings. They're not scary individuals. And by taking the step of engaging that person, you are learning about that person, and it informs your opinions, and the fear is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you go, oh, okay, well, this guy, there are things about him that are redeeming.
Oh, yeah.
There are things.
He was exceptionally intelligent and well-read.
Right. There are things about this person that are interesting. There are things about him that are caring. He's just, in terms of his beliefs,
he's a product of his environment, just like any of us are.
Exactly right.
You know, his personal experiences shaped the reason he believes what he believes, because it helped him make sense of the emotions he was feeling while he was going through them.
Right.
And then gave him sort of a pathway out and a way to express what he felt trapped by.
Yeah.
And turn it into a philosophical belief system. And he is extremely smart. He's extremely well-read. And I'd have no problem, you know, I mean, outside the taboo of having a Nazi on a show, I mean, if you didn't tell anyone that and you listened to him reason his way out of his philosophical belief system, you'd say this is a guy that's, he knows it. Like, he isn't ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
He isn't stupid in any way. And he is a bigot and he is a supremacist, but it isn't because he got it from someone else. It's not through association.
I'm sitting here hearing you say that you're for Nazism. I'm hearing you praise a Nazi,
right,
as opposed to denouncing it. And in my mind, I'm going, man, when we put this podcast out, are people going to think that we're somehow pro-Nazi,
mm-hmm,
or pro his ideas because we're not completely trashing the guy?
Right. If you don't go on the immediate offensive and give someone a fair shake, then you are part of the problem. You're on the side of evil, and you need to be disposed of, just like the Nazis are calling for.
Which is exactly the why we had like Daron and Richard on, because I want to understand what it's like. I'm never going. I hope to never go to prison. I hope to never have that experience, but I want to understand it because my tax dollars are going towards it. I don't ever want to go through what I don't remember what we called her in episode 144, Amanda. I don't want to know what she's gone through personally. I don't want to ever have to experience that level of heartbreak while dealing with DCS. I don't want to experience the heartbreak that Woody of episode 91 experiences when he is dealing with the Department of Corrections and trying. Like, Woody's such a great example. I'm sitting here talking to a guy. I think he said he finished eighth grade and that was it. Here's an intelligent man who is doesn't have a lot of teeth, is not an educated man, speaks, you know, in a way that doesn't sound intelligent, but Woody is an incredibly intelligent man.
Right. Just because you can't articulate it in the forms that people are used to hearing doesn't mean the thought processes aren't there.
And you know what? So Woody, when he goes and talks to state senators, he doesn't get a hearing.
Nope.
When he talks to media members, he doesn't get a hearing. And that doesn't make his feelings go away. It makes him more pissed off because he's got something to say.
And it's trapped in him.
And he's trapped. Amanda in 144 is trapped by basically a human animal. Drone felt trapped and imprisoned for 20-some years over a crime he did not commit. And nobody pays attention to them because they're white trash or they're black trash or they're, you know.
He doesn't sell it how they want to hear it.
Right. And so who is speaking for those people?
No one.
You know, and so for Woody to get progress, he's got to get someone like me, who is well connected locally in the media and politics, to be his guide.
You have to be his advocate.
Right. And you know how many people he's called and asked for that help from? About 20.
Can't get through the door.
And it's just me who said, yeah, I'll talk to you. And he's become a really good friend. And even with me, we still don't get anywhere. Because people just don't, the complexities of these problems don't fit into a 3-hour podcast like with Amanda.
Right.
You know?
They can't mentally unpack it right. And then take that time to use, you know, they're not willing to even sit through something like that.
Of course. You haven't listened to that episode on 144 because you're just like, I don't want to sit there and be depressed for 3 hours.
Yeah. You know, or a lot of the time it'll be, you know, here's somebody with a clear agenda.
Right.
You know, and so I'm not going to give them a true blank slate to sell me on it.
Absolutely.
Make their case.
And I'll tell you from a media perspective, you know, it's people always want something from you.
Right.
You know, people always have an agenda when they're talking to you. If you have money or you have power or you have a large voice, people look at you like a walking cash register.
Yeah, you're an asset to be exploited.
Right. And so no wonder people become jaded at that level. So, but again, it all comes back to a lack of understanding on, you know.
That's honestly, that perfectly captures why Donald Trump won.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of people who are, they can't put it into sociological terms. They can't put it into cultural, you know.
They can't sit on a stage for 4 minutes like Michael Moore did and perfectly say, fuck you.
Yeah, succinctly define why they believe what they, you know, why they're feeling what they're feeling. And so he was that advocate for a whole bunch of people who had just thought, they'd pretty much checked out of the political system. They thought, there's no one that represents me. There's no one that even gives me a chance because of how I look, how I sound, who I associate with, you know, where I eat, yada, yada, where I live, what kind of home I live in.
Right.
And that is why they were called a basket of deplorables.
Yeah.
And that's why they were missed, because surely no one wants to go and champion their cause. Surely no one's willing to associate with those that unruly mass.
Right. And you know what the left's response has been? We need to get Facebook to crack down on these sites like Red State and The Daily Wire and The Blaze and The Daily Caller, which have professional journalistic staffs that spend time, you know, they have a much more rigorous editorial policy than we do. But if we had the resources, if we had money and you and I were running a staff of people, we'd have journalistic integrity.
Yeah.
We would have, you know, Breitbart.
I don't know if we would.
Well,
I don't know if I would, because I think we live in a post-truth society. I think truth and verifying sources and that kind of thing has gotten to the point where I don't even know that it matters anymore.
No, I think you're a responsible person, and
I am, like, and I want to tell the truth,
right?
But I don't think truth's that effective anymore.
Sure, it's all in the way that you tell the truth, and that's where we're going to talk about Breitbart and Steve Bannon a little bit, because I think we actually share some values with Steve Bannon. And I think that he's largely misunderstood at this point. And I know saying that, it goes against the narrative of he's a white supremacist Nazi.
Well, he's anti-Semite.
Sure. So, if we had, let's say that we had, let's say that we were bringing in $1 million a year, all right, and we had a staff, and we put together a staff, and we were doing daily content, both, you know, video, audio, and you know, digital writing, we would use that efficiently and effectively, like
be more productive.
With Jim Wallace, you know, earlier this year, Jim Wallace had been arrested twice for domestic violence. And you and I both, in trying to approach that situation and saying to the Libertarian Party of Indiana, he's not the right guy, Rex Bell is the right guy, you know, and here's why he's wrong, we both took took responsibility for the voice that we have and said, what was the truth? What are the facts? And then you put those out in a way that people will notice. You know, and so I think that's a lot of what is happening is in some of these alt-right sites, and it sits, and I sit there and I go, well, by this podcast alone, we're going to have somebody go, oh, they're just alt-righters, which isn't true. I'm a, I'm a libertarian, but I'm sick of censorship. Libertarians don't believe in censorship. I'm not alt-right. I don't even know what that means, and it's
all alt-righters are against censorship, but that doesn't mean that all alt-righters are libertarians.
Exactly. And really what the term alt-right has become is a way to put people in a basket and then dismiss all of those people.
So, right, you categorize and demonize.
Right, so nobody has to listen to weird libertarians because they're alt-righters, so put them over here. And it doesn't matter that nobody ever actually listens to our podcast and listens to what we're saying because they might agree with us. They should agree with us. They've given up. They've given up the responsibility of consuming information.
Right. It isn't up to them. And we all do it. We all use signals in order to determine what's worth our time and investing in. But, you know, when it becomes a demonized term that most people aren't familiar with or even what it means, and that's used as a categorization, and the only reason you're unaware of what it means or the history behind it and why you hate it, you're unaware of. Mm-hmm. You just know that the people around you don't like it either, and so you're doing the exact same thing the racists are doing, only on a different scale.
Yeah, when somebody tells me that my opinion doesn't matter because I'm a straight white male and I'm full of privilege, I sit there and go, you know what, feminist friend of mine, I now sit here and go, you know what, I was willing to listen to arguments about privilege, and I have spent a lot of time thinking about that over the last year or two, as I have spent a lot of time dating and spending time with a friend who's a social worker and talking about this stuff. And really changing my view on women in society and how I talk about women, how I think about women, what I expect from women have greatly evolved over the last 2 or 3 years. And all of that progress in a single three-sentence comment on Facebook can disappear because you are telling me that I don't matter. And it just...
Well, it's a logical fallacy.
Yeah. And it just... You go, well, fine. Fuck you. I'll just be for Trump and grab women by the pussy. Whatever. Fuck you.
That's the problem with being the... You know, that's what I was writing about on election night when so many people couldn't get over it. Like, and I was like, you don't really... Every action has an equal and opposite reaction, and a culture's dynamic.
Yeah.
Societies are dynamic. They're not static. You know, the problem with... telling the largest voting bloc in America that they are to blame for societal ills is that they are still the largest voting bloc in America, and at some point they're going to be tired of being blamed.
I was just arguing with a liberal friend. She's cute. And so we were going back and forth, and I was just like, what are you talking about? Well, like, if you look at gay rights, if you look at trans rights, if you look at Black rights, if you look at women's rights, who is being marginalized? Well, you just don't understand because there's so much marginalization going on. We have a Black president and a female just won the popular vote. And had she not been the most corrupt politician on the planet and 30 years of being corrupt, then she would have won.
And the truth is, you know, you talk about Trump's Muslim registration database, whatever. At the end of the day, what they're arguing for, the censorship, the demeaning women, not treating them as equals, is the Muslim culture and society that Absolutely. They, you know, are proponents of.
You're building a McCarthy list.
Right.
You're going to put me on the list.
Right. I'm going to put you. But that's the thing, is they're championing the rights of diversity, of, you know, wanting to have Sharia law in a community, or we need to not enforce our cultural norms on them and ban burqas. Great. Now you just made sure that a bunch of women who may want to flee their husbands, or who feel like they're captive in a culturally separated community within Detroit, like in Dearbornistan.
Yeah.
You know, they are now emboldened just the same way as the Trump people are. And so it isn't that we are, you know, it isn't that the not we, but the, it isn't that the Trump people are so afraid of Muslims. It's that they're trying to desperately hold on to their culture because they are in living in the same fear that the left is living in fear of them.
Right.
It's just two people that don't interact. They don't get it. And they were, you know, one side was sure they were right, and so was the other. Yep. And they hate it. Now they even want to tear down the Electoral College.
That's what the Black Jeopardy on Saturday Night Live. I don't know. Did you see it?
You were telling me about it. I ended up watching it.
It's so
spot on commentary.
Yeah, because here's two groups of people who are very similar. You know, white people and black people. If they just talk to each other, they'd get along. The Trump supporter and the, you know, the black Democrat. They get along.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the reason you don't have gay marriage in California, is because the African American electorate never is anti-homosexual marriage.
Right. So, yeah, and the Electoral College is the argument of tearing it down is that they lost an election, when in reality, the Electoral College is set up as a stopgap measure to make sure that we don't have tyrants, but it also is part of a representative democracy. We don't have a direct democracy. We have a representative democracy, and Donald Trump's ideology and his voters better represent the majority of the country, and that is why he won the Electoral College.
If you take away his incendiary language, he is a really sound representation of American society.
Right.
If you take away the way he says things and his lack, he suffers from the inability to articulate.
Yeah.
He doesn't sound presidential. He doesn't sound diplomatic or like a statesman. He doesn't look anything like or behave anything like any leader of our country ever has in history, except maybe going back to like Andrew Jackson and Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah.
You know, they're the country rugged rough riders on, you know, right on the edge of the frontier. But, you know, Trump has the same disadvantages actually that, you know, his people do.
Yeah.
And that's where it struck such a chord. And that is more what is found to be unpalatable for the left,
mm-hmm.
is how unrefined he is.
Yeah.
Is how raw and uncensored he is, rather than, and he's not afraid of them. It's sure. The first guy that's ever won by being completely unafraid of being called a racist, bigoted, homophobe, and in fact, flirted white with the line.
And then
smiled as he was looking at him right up to that line.
I've been reading David K. Johnston's The Making of Donald Trump, which David K. Johnston is one of the best writers. I'm going to have to interview him because he's so great. Free Lunch is a great book. And he's been covering Donald Trump for 30 years and has a huge file on him. He is a former tax reporter for the New York Times, Pulitzer Prize winner, I think 5 times, I remember correctly. Here's a guy who is, in 50 years of journalism, has never been challenged because he's such a good investigative reporter. You read this book, as a sidebar, you read this book and you go, the left and the Democrats are so incompetent. I am sitting here and I am not even into the 1980s Donald Trump, and I can write 3 attack ads right now that are more effective than anything. That they just focused on his words, and they focused on the division of his words. And sitting here looking at it, I'm going, you know, you watch the, let me focus on my point here. The left didn't attack Donald Trump on real scandals.
So they never took him serious.
He is exactly right. He is as every bit corrupt as Hillary Clinton is.
His family was.
Yes, he is.
Well, I mean, like, I am of the belief, you know, when you are trying to be a developer in New York City, you don't have the luxury of morality.
Yeah, the guy's lawyer was the lawyer for Senator Joe McCarthy, you know, the guy with the list that I was just talking about. He then went to New York City and then became the attorney for all the crime families that oversaw construction. And then Donald Trump hired him as his lawyer because he said, well, I can make sure that I can get concrete on time.
Well, I mean, that's why you don't have the delays and the cost overruns.
Sure. Because he's making sure that those people are taken care of.
That lawyer was the only difference in the reason he's able to say, this is why we were able to do it under budget and what no one else was able to do, is because he hadn't. He instead of trying to be above the, you know, be above the fray, he got all the way down in the mud and dealt with people who would, you know, like JFK, they could deliver an election for JFK.
Literally here's my point. Literally his entire career, this guy has been written off and mocked and told he's not part of the crowd, and he just relishes at this point. He just says, I don't want to be part of your crowd.
No, I built your playground.
Right. I'm simultaneously reading This Town by Mark Leibovich, which, if you haven't read it, it's an excellent read. Both of these books are great. And it's an interesting study as you read about Donald Trump while you're reading about Washington insiders. And what you have to understand about journalists and reporters, because I've spent my entire career around these people, politicians and journalists are very similar. Intelligent people, nerdy. They were on the high school news club, the chess club.
Debate team.
They were not noticed. They were not jocks. They were not part of the popular crowd. And their intelligence got them to a point where they are accepted into a group. And the, you know, a lot of them went to Harvard and Yale, and they're all friends with each other, and they want to go to Washington, D.C. and be part of that crowd of 600 people that rule the America. Or if you're here in Indianapolis, there's 500 people. You know, Abdul and I used to call them the 300, because there's about 300 people that are actually politically engaged in Indianapolis politics. And it is, you all are familiar. I showed up today to that event, and I hung out with Jim Shella, guy that I've had crosswords about here on the show and on my Facebook. He doesn't take it personally, because that's the game. He and I sat there and talked with him for a while, you know, and that's just how it is. Like, you're part of the same industry. It's like if you went to a trade show for pipe fitting, mm-hmm. you know, and you talk to people.
You still talk to the sales rep for your opponent.
Right.
Your competitor.
Because you never know when you might need that. You know, David Axelrod is still talking to people because he might want to be a CNN contributor.
Right, he said today that everyone needs to stop criticizing the transition team because they're no worse off than they were at the same phase.
David Axelrod is one of the few voices to listen to. Van Jones as well.
Actually, most of Obama's first election campaign team are, like, David Plouffe said, you know, he called it from the beginning, we should not run against Donald Trump.
Yep. So, Obama himself, I even like at this point.
Yeah.
But what you see in these people, and if you ever studying emotions and human attachment and psychology and how people relate to each other on a fundamental level, once you really do that, that has informed my commentary on an impact of my personal life on a great level, because you then see in the actions of these political figures their desperate need to be liked. Everybody in politics is doing something for attention and external validation because they don't feel good about themselves. Donald Trump's that way. Hillary Clinton looked like she'd been crying like you wouldn't believe yesterday. She's just been weeping because the ego wound of losing to Donald Trump has to be horrendous. But they are desperate to be liked. And the way that you get ahead in any political circle as a journalist is by access. I'll never forget the day that I criticized someone on the air as an intern at Abdul's place, and he goes, it was a Democrat, and so I was like, I thought, well, I'm at talk radio, I'll criticize a Democrat, I'm doing something good, and Abdul clicked over the intercom and goes, you realize we have to work with these people, right?
Or we lose our currency.
And that's when I went, oh, the media's rigged too, which is what Donald Trump's talking about. You read the WikiLeaks, journalists.
Well, the FBI couldn't use the very data they would need to conduct a thorough and comprehensive investigation because it was specifically ineligible for admittance.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's set up. I mean, it's set up where even if it is leaked, you can't use it.
Yeah. And so you read this town and you read about Andrea Mitchell, the head political... Andrea Mitchell, the head political reporter for NBC. She is a socialite who goes to all the Washington parties. She's married to Alan Greenspan. And as Mark Leibovich puts it in the book, that if you were drawing a comic book, a graphic novel of Washington, in the back of every panel would be Alan Greenspan,
mm-hmm.
because they're at every Washington party. It's a group of people who have worked with each other for years, and they trade on access as currency, and they are afraid of Donald Trump because what he now means to all these nerds in Washington, D.C., L.A., you know, all the political class that wants to be the next Hunter S. Thompson, they don't matter.
They don't have any currency to trade on because they didn't take him serious.
Right.
They have their entire competitive advantage is access. That's what differentiates them from us.
Right.
You know, they are commentators and journalists, and the reason they have access is because they treat people with kitty gloves and they maintain relations and diplomatic ties, but they couldn't take Trump seriously because his reputation preceded him.
Right.
And it just simply wasn't possible that enough of America in an electoral college system would like him enough and not Hillary Clinton enough
right.
that he could win and they would no longer have access. An entire economy in Washington, D.C. is entirely built upon influence and the ability to get meetings. These people don't have skills that translate over into the regular economy. And you're about to watch it collapse mm-hmm. because they do not have an in.
Yeah. The Ken Duberstein was the last chief of staff for Reagan in the 6 months when nothing was going on. And the guy has traded on that one credit mm-hmm. for 25 years as a lobbyist, and he's incredibly narcissistic. And he tried to get in on the transition team, and he was told, no, no thanks. See you later. Well, I'm one of the most powerful Republicans in Washington, D.C.
You're
going
to rue the day you went away from me.
Right.
Just like Mitt Romney and just like right. John Kasich and just like yada, 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 yada.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Romney's rumored to be Secretary of State, as is literally every other person on the planet.
Yeah, brilliant. Keep everyone guessing.
Literally every person. Petraeus. Rudy.
Well, I mean, it builds into a narrative that you did a really comprehensive review.
Right.
And you really looked into people rather than just, I went in with my set few. It keeps people off the scent.
But it's so funny that they're making Secretary of State the prime appointment and that they're running, because it's such an extra little dig at her.
Oh, it is. You know, it is. And then I love the meme that's Trump decides to work with Clinton and offers her the ambassadorship of Libya.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the media is afraid. And so what do people do when they're afraid? They lash out. And the when I sit here and I look at this, and you watch the telephone effect, okay? If you watch what Trump says, or if you read these Breitbart headlines, so I was listening to NPR's Fresh Air, and it's a Bloomberg reporter being interviewed about...
no wonder you like liberal girls.
About Bannon, yeah. Bannon, and, you know, they're reading the headlines of the same five or six horrific Breitbart headlines that prove that they're a white supremacist site, and but they never get into the meat of the articles, and I haven't gone and read those articles yet, but like, you know, somebody's a renegade Jew. But and I'm sitting there going, well, okay, yeah, that's a pretty ballsy headline, and it could be anti-Semitic, but it could be written by a Jewish person who is, you know, saying, here's why this person's a renegade, and here's why they're the blah, 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 blah. And it could be totally spun as an anti-Semitic headline. And the person who is interviewing this guy is not sitting there giving you context about the headline. He's just repeating what he read in the Washington Post, which was, you know, given to him as a quote from some liberal group. Like, it's like once you really sit there and you go, okay, and this is what I've done. All right. I don't know Steve Bannon from Adam. Know nothing about the guy. I want to know a little bit about the guy. Is he a racist? Is he accused of what? And what I have found so far is that the guy is not a racist. He's a lot like Donald Trump. He's willing to kind of fan some of the flames. Actually, I want to play something from that Fresh Air interview. Just a few lines here. Bloomberg journalist Joshua Green is talking to Fresh Air. I don't know the host's name, but they're talking about Steve Bannon.
News and if they write shocking comments in response to the stories. But as you look at the content, I mean, does the website seem to, you know, embrace and propagate these views of white nationalism and white supremacists? What's your
sense? I think it certainly fuels those views. And, you know, I had a discussion with Bannon about this back in 2015. About, you know, I said, you know, you're a former Harvard guy, you're a Goldman Sachs banker. I'm sort of shocked at some of the things you write because you come out of a culture that isn't, you know, openly racist or anti-Semitic. And what he said essentially was that they are trying to reach an audience that doesn't have an outlet anywhere else in mainstream media. I pulled up some of the quotes. He said, you know, we focus on things like immigration, ISIS, race riots, what he calls the persecution of Christians. He says, we give a perspective that other outlets are not going to give. There are not a lot of outlets that are covering that, at least not from the perspective that we should be running a victory lap every time some sort of traditional value gets undercut. The question I was always interested in getting at with Bannon was, do you really believe this stuff? Because a lot of it is offensive and inflammatory. And he said, you know, personally, I'm mixed on a lot of this stuff. But we're airing a lot of things that traditional people are thinking that don't get mainstream media representation anymore. So they were making a market for these kinds of views and these kinds of stories and attracting an audience, what's turned out to be an extremely large and powerful audience, by tapping these sentiments.
I'm wondering what Bannon brought to the campaign. It seems like his real expertise is in messaging. Was he primarily a guy who brought that expertise?
I think messaging and theater, for lack of a better word. I mean, Bannon is a guy who came out of the media world. He used to be a movie producer. He made documentary movies. He's somebody, I think, with a pretty clear sense of narrative and also of the value of presentation and how you can seize the attention of the entire political culture if you push the buttons right. I think he's figured out that you can essentially seize control of the political conversation through stunts like the one that Bannon orchestrated before the second debate, where he rolled out all these women who had accused Bill Clinton of sexual assault and sexual harassment. And he's somebody, I think, who takes Trump's impulses and channels them into a more or less cogent worldview that fits into this right-wing populist ethos that Bannon is all about.
You know, what's interesting about...
anticipated.
All right, so we won't subject you to any more NPR, but a lot of that was about O'Bannon's background, which he's a former Harvard guy, got into Harvard, then got into Goldman Sachs, and started working as the liaison and the agent doing the deals between Hollywood and Goldman Sachs. And then started his own firm in doing some of those deals. And then eventually he had made his money, and he started doing conservative documentaries. And he met Andrew Breitbart because he was living in L.A. Andrew Breitbart was from L.A. If you've never seen Hating Breitbart, it's a great movie. And the two of them got to talking, and Breitbart essentially... I forget what the documentary was about specifically, but it was 04, and Breitbart basically recruited him, and Bannon became a funder.
Was that the one with, he used to be at Dartmouth.
It was Reagan's War. He read the book Reagan's War and then did a movie about it in 2004 and did that documentary and became sort of the right's Michael Moore in some ways. And in another interview that I'll play a little bit here in just a second with Matt Lewis, recorded in 2011, it's a really interesting, and Matt Lewis's podcast, he's a commentator for the Daily Caller. I really like Matt Lewis. He outlines his new documentary about Sarah Palin, and he's just disgusted by the way that Sarah Palin is treated when he has spent time studying her and her governorship and sees how she was treated. And he's totally incensed by that. And I think that's sort of where he comes down on the Donald Trump stuff. It's like, I want to get to know the guy because I saw what they did to Sarah Palin and that didn't match. So I want to get to know Trump. And Trump and Bannon have the same instincts, essentially, which is the P.T. Barnum style of politics. And we're really returning, and this is sort of a summation of this entire episode, returning to the 1800s of media, where media and politics, like politics was entertainment in the 1800s, and you had a lot of voter participation because of it, and you had a lot of voter participation from people who didn't really know much better. The reason we have straight ticket ballots, you know, we have a chicken for the Democrats here in Indiana, and it's because they used to hold a chicken up, say, all right, raise your hand if you want the Democrats, raise up this, and that's the Republicans. I mean, that's why we have straight ticket voting, because they just vote for the whole slate, and they give people beer and get everybody drunk and get them to go vote. And you had the Rushville Republican, and you had the Cordon Democrat, and you had the Republican newspaper and the Democratic newspaper, and you had then the alternative newspaper. And
sort of a diaspora of media outlets.
Exactly. And so what citizens would do is they would go and they'd read what all of these have to do. And gee, we are libertarians. And then you got to go read Breitbart. And then you go read the Huffington Post or Raw Story. Like, that's where we're returning. Politics is entertainment now. It is nerd sports. And it is about who can make the best argument in the most entertaining way that grabs the biggest audience. And you can't do that in corporate media anymore. You got to do it through independent media. And so you're going to need people like Steve Bannon or the Koch brothers, give us a call, to fund operations like We Are Libertarians, or you have to crowdfund them like we do through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. If you want better information, the more you donate to us, and the more likely we can make this a lifestyle business, essentially, for Greg and I, the more we'll give to you, the more we can do for you.
Or we got to start selling vitamins, and we really don't want to do that.
But that's a great point. Alex Jones can say whatever he wants because he self-funds through selling vitamins. And we can mock that, but the guy figured out a way to make money doing exactly what he wants to do, what he thinks is right, how he wants to do it, and people love it, no matter how crazy. And if people find out you listen to Alex Jones, that's why I now tell people I listen to Alex Jones. I don't buy into what Alex Jones says 95% of the time, but I want to know what the dude says. I will listen to Glenn Beck. I want to know what Glenn Beck says. I read the New York Times and the Washington Post. I want to know what they say. I listen to NPR. I listen to, you know, Ezra Klein. Next up, after I finish the Matt Lewis podcast from the Conservative Commentator, I'm going to listen to Ron Brownstein on Ezra Klein's podcast because I want that opinion. I want to know what all sides are saying. And it's entertaining to me.
Yeah, fully enveloped, you know, argument by all sides.
And that's where we're heading as a society. So, and in the 20th century, you had that yellow journalism, which caused the Spanish-American War. So Pulitzer started the Pulitzer Prize and the foundation to try and standardize journalism and make it, get rid of the yellow journalism and all the, we need centralized sources of information.
You can't be a journalist unless you have a journalism degree from Northwestern.
Right. And so, yeah, you've got to be from Northwestern or Harvard. You know, I love Halperin and John Heil on Bloomberg Politics, but they're Harvard, at least John's, he was in school with Obama. He was there at Harvard with Obama, you know, and that's how he got his job and that's how he got his start. It's that pedigree. And the days of it not being entertaining, that's over. The days of Walter Cronkite barely existed. Okay, we're now back to a realistic standard.
Well, there was scarcity on distribution.
Right.
And when there's scarcity on distribution, they can take the Jay Leno approach in the great moderation. But when that is unchained, when there is no more scarcity on news and information because of the digital revolution, there's no need. There's no way being the most popular, most moderate is just waiting to die.
Yeah.
You're going to watch your audience get cherry picked away by people who are already leaning or associated with a certain cause as it goes on and on and on.
Yeah. My day job is for a comedy outlet, and we don't have shrinking numbers because we're funny and we're relevant and great. But the thing that I've seen in comedy in what these guys come in and say who work with Comedy Central or these cable channels, like, I can make more money going and working with Netflix or some startup in LA than I can for one of the cable channels, and I get way more creative freedom. And so you aren't going to have the centralized cable. Your entertainment and your media, whether it's political, whether it is comedy, whether it is movies, whether it is whatever you're into, it's going to be $5 a month. That's how the model of the future is.
It's a la carte.
Premium. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a la carte. And then, you know, ultimately, though, that takes a lot of time. And that's very, it makes discovery a really labor-intensive act for new content mediums. So you end up getting packaging. So it's always the same. You know, it's one cluster that breaks into a bunch of little pieces. Those little pieces develop and the cream rises to the crop, and then it turns into, like, you know, packages. You get XYZ channels or with,
right?
Because you like this, this comes for 3 months, you get XYZ. And it's bundling.
It's exactly why we promote Johnny Rocket Launchpad, the Lava Flow, and those other guys.
Yeah, cross promotion makes discovery way easier.
Because I believe in what those other three are doing. They have different content that we do. We're not necessarily competitors. We think that if you listen to us and you listen to them, your life will be enhanced as opposed to, you know.
Just because you like Kettle One vodka and we like Svedka, you know, I'm just glad you like vodka and you're on our team.
Right. So that's why we do it. We want to make it easier. That's why we have all those resources at our website. Like, it's, yeah. So I want to play another
piece. They're not a threat to us.
Right. So this is where media is headed. It's about entertainment, and it's about hearing a lot of differing opinions. So let's listen to the monster, Steve Bannon, on Matt Lewis's podcast.
Do you know why they consider him an anti-Semite?
Why?
It's when he was in Hollywood, he complained to his ex-wife that he didn't want to send his kids to the Archer School because he didn't like the way Jews raised their kids to be whiny.
Okay.
That's why he's an anti-Semite.
Right. One phrase.
And it was said by an ex-wife who accused him of battery and that was thrown out of court.
Right.
Anti-Semite for sure.
Clear.
Worked at Goldman Sachs.
Right.
Hollywood.
Clearly hates Jews. But see, that's an anti-Semitic statement, Greg.
No, it isn't.
It's an anti-Semitic statement that we've made.
It's a distribution pattern that you can verify through statistics.
And they tag him with everything that is written on the site, and then they take information and extrapolate it. And if you watch Donald Trump, you see people saying, well, Donald Trump said this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but Donald Trump said that stuff in October of 2015. And he has said different stuff, and yeah, it is for political expedience, but yell at him for that, not for racism. Or, you know,
pandering.
I mean, pandering is a better word.
You're mad at a politician for pandering?
Right. He's a politician. So you see on all these cable news channels over the last 2 or 3 weeks when it comes to Steve Bannon, how it's gone from, there are concerns that Steve Bannon might be... might not like the Jews, and then now it's risen to a level where he's a white supremacist who hates Jews, who is a part of the Klan.
I will disavow Steve Bannon when Bernie Sanders disavows Robert Byrd.
When he disavows the protesters that are beating white people for being Trump supporters with hats on. Like holding Bernie Sanders personally responsible for what some protesters do in the middle of America is ridiculous. Holding Donald Trump to, like, we're taking these tweets off of people's Twitter and using them as gospel and saying, see? Like, well, how do you know that person just didn't make that up?
Which they just admitted they have to crack down on because a lot of it is fictional anyway.
Exactly. But we've got to get rid of...
You don't get to play both cards.
Right. We've got to get rid of the fake news sites in one of your liberal friends' posts.
But I'm going to source it before we do that.
Right. And then they're sharing the Sean King post.
The white guy.
The white guy who is basically Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah.
In one, and then they're...
He's the Black Lives Matters white knight.
Right. Trying to... It's just the cognitive dissonance. But you... Listen, you tell me... You listen to this, and you tell me if this guy sounds like somebody who wants to censor speech.
I strongly believe, and I've got a lot of respect for the people on the left, I strongly believe that most people, most Americans, you got 20% on each side or not, but most Americans, and even professional journalists, are at the end of the day very fair people. And if you show them something and respect their intelligence and don't dumb it down and put the bar high, and this film was, you know, fairly complicated in one regard, that they'll respond to it.
All right, so clearly somebody who just wants only conservative thought to be out there, especially white supremacist thought. Like, it's clear to me after really kind of looking into this guy, like, he's being smeared. He is being unfairly called a white supremacist. Not saying that there are article headlines on the Breitbart website that I endorse by saying this. He's a guy who is a businessman who targets a market that doesn't feel like they're being representative.
He discovered a market. It's not like he's right. Taking away, like, or he, you know, put a new blend on the Washington Post's existing business model.
Yeah.
He literally created a new, you know, market that was being underserved.
And he's doing it in a way that is getting attention.
Yes, because he's incendiary, because that's what you have to be.
Right, because Breitbart, what they talk about in the Fresh Air interview from the Bloomberg reporter is like, all right, so Breitbart studied under Matt Drudge. And then Bannon and his CEO partner at Breitbart are honoring the legacy of their founders, Matt Drudge and Andrew Breitbart, where it was over the top. We're going to get attention to bring issues because the only way that we can rise above the mainstream media, which will not take us seriously, is to get attention to draw them to these issues.
Once we stop courting their favor, we're free to just go ahead and fully develop this market and create a voting coalition.
Yep. And so the other thing that Bannon funds is a think tank in Tallahassee, and it is run by Peter Schweizer. and it's the Government Accountability Institute. And
so innocuous. Always named, right. Like, you know, it might as well be, you know, a House Budget Committee.
Right. So it's this journalist, Peter Schweitzer, working in Tallahassee and just kind of, you know, toiling. And then Bannon comes in and it's a, and then he funds it and hires researchers. You know what they just released? Clinton Cash. Clinton Cash took off. Well, what they did to get attention is they had a different route. So Bannon and Peter Schweitzer wrote this book, took the book to the FBI, took the evidence to the FBI. They listened, took the book to all the investigative reporters at these major outlets like the New York Times, like the Washington Post. But because it was Peter Schweitzer and Bannon, they wouldn't touch it. Mm-hmm. They didn't report on it. They briefly reported on it. So they put it out. All right, so you've got Clinton Cash. You've got a Secretary of State and a former president selling access to American policy from foreign governments, third world dictators.
That simultaneously financing the Islamic State.
Yep. And no one will touch it because it's Hillary Clinton, because this is a Republican group.
Which actually is justified because people tend to die when you go against her.
And so...
That's not saying that she's the murderer. It's saying that there is an odd number of coincidental deaths for people who are against Hillary Clinton. It's just a random distribution.
It's just weird. It's even an inside joke amongst themselves, if you read Mark Leibovich's book.
They're not unaware.
Yeah, and so nobody pays attention to it. So Breitbart starts keeping the flame alive. They start publishing it. Articles about it. They start picking it apart. Schweitzer starts writing articles in the New York Post and in Breitbart. They keep the information out there. Lo and behold, a presidential candidate finally picks it up and runs on it, and he won. Bannon had researchers, and this is the model, and this is, honestly, if we can find a rich guy to fund us, Greg, this is what we'd do. We do exactly what this guy is doing. You'd have the research arm. Mm-hmm. You'd run the research arm. And then there would be the carny side, which I would run. Let me draw all the weirdos in to get attention.
Give me your poor, your tired, your hungry.
Your freaks. Yeah. I want all your freaks. And eventually, you sit there and you charm politicians until one of them picks you up. And then Rob Kendall runs for office, and then he hires us to run his campaign. And then, lo and behold, becomes the central campaign issue, and you win on it.
Like, well, it's testing. I mean, you know, everything... And the only reason that these guys are possible is because of years and years of ostracization of a group of people who felt left behind.
Yep.
And so Breitbart and Drudge and Bannon, none of these guys are possible if a bunch of people in the United States felt like they didn't get screwed over by their government and left behind in the policy conversations for getting a fair shake.
Yeah.
They left the door wide open to a group of people that all of a sudden showed up, and all of a sudden they found the blue-collar billionaire, which is the biggest conundrum or paradox in politics. Yeah. I mean, to think that Hillary Clinton was seen as less of a blue-collar representative than the billionaire from The Apprentice who goes around flaunting. He has his name put on his 747 and flies into a hangar. So all he has to do is get off the steps and jump up on a stage, you know, shake hands, you know, kiss babies, and then get right back on the jet and off into the sunset. That's the blue collar candidate.
This is a billionaire who has, who destroyed a piece of property that was revered in terms of Art Deco and built this garish, ugly tower, although it's very beautiful. It's huge. And in the middle of it has four stories. He said the building of his four levels of apartment were more complex than the building of the rest of the building. He flies around on three or four jets.
He has a helicopter, jets.
He got those helicopters from mobsters who used the helicopter company as a front for he basically hired the helicopter companies, and they barely flew helicopters. It was just a front for him to give them money for his construction projects.
Like the Clinton Global Initiative?
Exactly right. He is he's bankrupt. He's been involved in 6 bankruptcies, but personally 4. He has lost access to all the property. He is so incompetent at running things, I'm sorry, Greg, that he took casinos where you literally expect to go throw your money away. You do, and you walk out poor. He bankrupted casinos.
His problem was starting casinos in the middle of the savings and loan crisis and a faltering economy.
My point is she lost to this guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's why she looked so terrible yesterday.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she looked bad.
The Crypt Keeper.
Yes.
I mean, she is not, she's not taking this well.
You got to go see our Instagram, the meme that, did you make it?
Yeah, I made that.
It is so funny. Oh my God.
But I saw that, like, oh, and I was just like, she looks like The Walking Dead. I mean, she could have been an extra on the television series. And, but you know, it's she is so, that just shows you how entitled she felt.
Yeah, they all feel that way.
It was a coronation. It was literally like Hitler going into Rome and being crowned Holy Roman Emperor.
If you want to really enjoy yourself, Greg, or listener, go to CNN.com and watch the Fareed Zakaria the Sunday after the election. Fareed Zakaria is a part of the New York, you know, pop the. As the Fifth Column guys call him, the journalos, you know, he's just a part of the Washington elite. He's a part of the New York elite. He's
their friend in Mumbai.
He's a global thinker who is all about globalization and neocon policies. And he was so sad. And it just was so great. It's like, yeah, well, now you, anything that Fareed Zakaria is for, you should be against. You should watch him just so you know what they're talking about, and then just do the opposite.
He's not a bad source of information. His worldview is flawed.
Absolutely. He's a very thoughtful and interesting person.
Right. It's just globalism's wrong.
Right.
Globalism's, you know, it was a solution to end war. Yeah. It was a way to intertwine economies and cultural differences, kumbaya, yada, yada, yada. Unfortunately, it's not the course of human history. You know,
I'm not opposed to globalization in the economic sense. It's just when it's government-based, you can't.
They end up creating NAFTA.
Exactly.
And that's what happens. And right. You get Trump. But, you know, there, it isn't a smooth process of development. They act like society is something that can be planned out. Steps will be taken, and step by step by step by step, we'll arrive at this perfect destination, and shouldn't we all thank them for taking us there? And that isn't the case, because actors change. The world changes. Situations change. Economies change. People have competing interests. Like, if you look at the world, the United States has been lucky. It has been the one global power since World War II. It has been unright. I mean, even the Soviet Union, we knew that we could just build up our military and it would bankrupt them. Yeah. We didn't even have to fire a bullet. I mean, we've had it very lucky, except now, because we were complacent, because our demographics are changing and we built a social welfare state where the costs are, you know, exceeded the projections, we're saddled with a debt that doesn't allow us to be the world police. Donald Trump is a recognition of that. And he is saying it's real politics. It's that, why do I hate Putin? Like, he literally is. That's the beauty of Trump, is that Americans just think we should hate Russia.
Right.
Trump knows so little, he has to start with, well, why do we hate Putin?
Right.
It's the brilliance of naive, like being naive.
Right.
Because then you have to say, well damn it, I don't actually. Well, because, well, I don't know. And you say, well, why do we hate him?
It goes back to that piece from Vox that we read on the last episode, where it's the knowing that's important. If you appear to have the knowledge, then your friends will like you.
Yeah.
Donald Trump doesn't care about being liked, because he lives his life in the default position of being disliked. Like, I've never seen a political figure, now that I'm really looking into him harder, going, this guy literally has been disliked his entire life. The second you turn on the TV, they come from the position of why Donald Trump is bad and why Hillary Clinton was good.
He was the least favorite son in his family. I mean, his brother that, you know, died of alcoholism was the god. You know, he was the pirate,
right.
and he revered him because he was the clear favorite. And so, you know, he got sent away to, you know, New York military school for high school because he was unruly.
Right.
And abrasive, and no one liked him, but he was a natural leader, even though, for whatever reason, he was able to take his abrasive personality and his just constant obnoxiousness and turn it into, you know, qualities people rallied behind.
Right.
And that's been his whole life. It's, you know, he could have very easily, they showed, if he had just taken his money, put it into a an index fund, like the money he got from his dad, put it into an index fund, he would have more money than he has today.
Sure. He was a trust fund baby.
And could have done nothing.
He
instead, he went and lost. He had negative $90 million in net worth. Like, that is pretty awesome, that instead of just sitting and taking, you know, your free pass, you end up being below poverty. Like, you're so poor, it's a negative number, and yet you have to take it on the face in the Page Six press.
I'm fuzzy on the exact figure, but it's from the Trump book by David K. Johnston. The moment he was born, in his first trust fund, he had four times the average American salary already.
Oh, yeah.
In a trust fund.
Yeah, just sitting and waiting until he was 18 years old. And right. Instead of just doing what, you know, actually what anyone else in Manhattan society from the established and pedigree families would have done, where they live off the interest and that finances their, you know, rich kids of Instagram lifestyle, he decides to, you know, bet all of it and ends up losing all of it, taking egg on the face after he went around bragging about how great he was. You know, a very public and messy divorce.
He built a company so big that it literally was too big to fail, and the New Jersey and New York and federal government had to bail him out.
Yeah, because it would have wrecked the economy and set in a 10-year depression.
Yeah.
You know, around the gaming community. Because he was that ballsy to try, and then when the permits don't come through, because you... This is why he's going to know how to handle Washington, D.C. Like, Barack Obama went into Washington, D.C. thinking that everybody was rational and you could get him in a room away from the press, and by presenting facts, you could get to a compromise. That is the most idealistic, naive view, and I wish that were the case, because that would be awesome.
Which is
why I respect President Obama, that he went in with those blinders,
thinking that we were the romantic view of the Roman Senate.
Exactly. Right. And Donald Trump is literally the opposite view. It's all right. Everything's the cost of doing business. I have absolutely no morals. This is what I want to do. How do I do it? What secrets do I need? What leverage and pain points exist, and how do I go get them?
Yeah. So
it's we have followed the ideal with, you know, it's Satan. But it's not Satan. It's not evil. It's that he's is so pragmatic
babies.
At his core that it doesn't matter. It's just he accepts the world as it is without trying to change it.
He's the exact opposite of Barack Obama, who is a true idealist. Mm-hmm. Like, it is funny to because you think, oh, well, Barack Obama's so pragmatic. Like, he's not pragmatic at all. He's barely gotten anything done.
And it's because he goes into it thinking, if I present this
right,
people will, we're all rational people. We will say, nope, this is the right thing for America. Yeah. Let's do it. And then the world doesn't work like that. The world has entrenched interests. They're protective of those interests, and they're not going to let you in if they don't trust you. And so the only way to move them is through exploitation, through secrets, through, you know, the enemy of the enemy is my friend.
Right.
And that's why he was so successful as a developer in New York, is that the real estate world of New York is completely controlled by the mob families. They control the pricing. It's a cartel for supplies. You know, what they price at, it's all collusion. They set price floors, and it's for the same thing within the local government for getting licenses and permits for things. And so he just says, all right, I'll take the mob boss attorney.
He hires the mob boss attorney. He built his with Ready Mix, which dries much quicker and is much easier to spoil. And so you think about it, you've got the Teamsters driving it there, you got the concrete unions, you got the pourers, you got the construction workers opening and closing the gate, you got all these different elements that can go wrong at any point. Why would you use a cheaper, say, you know, version to spoil where it can completely screw you over financially and you're already right on the brink? Well, you've got certainty that your concrete's going to
get poured. Those aren't going to be a problem.
Right. Whereas every other builder at the time in the late 70s, they were using, I think they were using concrete. But they were using a different type of concrete that was much more, you know, risk adverse.
And, yeah, it gave them leeway.
Right. And so kind of what Johnston says in his book is that at every point, and this is part of a scary thought for me about Trump, is that Trump is, he takes risks. Like, there was an instance where he hired Polish workers, construction workers, and they weren't wearing hard hats. And it was law that you had to, it's not just law, it's common sense. Wear hard hats on a construction site. I spent 15 years of my life on construction sites. You wear hard hats and safety boots, and you wear the gear not because OSHA tells you to, but because it keeps you alive. And he didn't demand that. He didn't make that a rule. He let them do whatever they want. And it's just like, dude, you have illegal Polish workers building your buildings, and anything can go wrong and expose you at any time. And
but not, though, because they're illegal.
Sure, but what I'm saying is, like, he allows so many things that are, not only is it...
It's cavalier.
It's cavalier towards their lives, his business...
His exposure.
His exposure, and he brings that cavalier attitude. It has cost him big. Yeah, it has worked, but it also, we're now talking about the President of the United States.
But we're also talking about the Trump of the 1980s and 1990s.
Oh, you think he's grown?
No, his new business. So, like, that's what, the, like, in his books, what he writes about is that's right. why he turned into a lifestyle luxury licensing company. They don't own assets anymore.
Right.
Trump doesn't ever own the buildings they are tasked with developing, and he licenses out his name. He's become such a personal brand, he doesn't have to buy the building, mm-hmm. doesn't have to put together the financing. He gets to put his name on it. They know that it will be successful and seen as premium, so they pay to have his name, and then they still, like if you were a movie producer, give him final cut. But he gets to make the decisions and you know, the structure, design, everything like that, without any risk of exposure financially by putting the financing together and personally signing on it. He literally just takes his name and lets it, and then gets to run with his vision.
The yeah, but that's... He also was forced out of owning a lot of the buildings that he ran.
Oh yeah, but I'm saying, like, now, like right. like the in downtown Chicago, like when you come in from the Lake Michigan on Chicago,
sure,
the crown jewel of Chicago is the Trump International Tower.
Yeah,
and that is a building he never had to put any financing for. He never had to do anything other than put his name on it, and he got to have final cut on every last decision of design, what vendors were allowed in, you know, how much was going to be condos, apartments, you know, the.
But isn't it cavalier to run for president then, because he has really killed that business in a lot of ways?
It could have been, but it worked. Like, I think he would have dropped out after the first, like, you know, after that first debate. It really, he hadn't done any rallies yet. He just no one could really tell how serious he was, or, like, you know, like Howard Stern said, if this was a leverage to get a better deal with NBC for right. The Apprentice. And the fact that it was like, I can do this. I have the name ID. I can hold my own against the best of the best in the Republican Party, which deepest bench, I don't know who else you would say should have been thrown into those 17. Like, what other Republican would you say that person belongs there?
Because, there was every ideology represented.
And every of the best of those ideologies.
Absolutely.
It was the cream of the crop of the Republican bench. And he held his own. It was like, well, hell, I might just pull this thing off. And then it goes from, I have a premium lifestyle brand, to I'm a part of American history forever. And all these people that mocked me as being the ugly American, I'll be in the history book, and they won't.
Right. So, did you know he ran for president?
Yeah, 2000,
in 2000
on the Reform Party.
On the Reform Party, and he ran for president briefly. And kind of the working theory in the book is that when he ran for president, it was built around a speaking tour,
mm-hmm.
and so his campaign stops were intertwined with this, you know, like Tony Robbins, like motivational speaking tour.
$5,000 weekend seminar series where you walk over fire coals.
Right, exactly. And so he basically used it as a write-off. He bragged about being the only candidate in American history to make money while running for president, because he wrote off, and he actually had the campaign paying him for the plane instead of paying for it. And then once it was over, he stopped running for president. And I guess the talk was like him rambling for like 20 minutes, and then he walked away, and it was like people learned nothing.
Well, now it's just 2 hours.
Now it's 2 hours. But I laughed. I was like, he's just literally everything I learned about this guy. He's just comically awful.
Well, I mean,
still beat Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I mean, that she was the only candidate that could have lost to Donald Trump.
Right, and it's because if anybody had read this book, like, here's a guy who is an impeccable journalist, and no, like, I'm sitting here going, how did Hillary's people not read this book and start picking? The only time that Marco Rubio drew blood is when he used something from this book. And, you know, here's a guy who has covered Trump forever. Trump called him and basically was like, oh, you're not going to write anything I don't like, are you? Or else I'll sue you. You know, and like the guy was like, well, Johnston was like, well, you're a public figure and I'm a journalist, so I can say whatever I want. He's like, yeah, but I'll still sue you. It'll still cost you money if you lie about me, which is threatening. You know, and it's like every single page, there's another thing where it's just like, holy crap, this guy's awful. And nobody used it. And so when I look at it and I go, well, Hillary, you're to blame. It's not Comey.
See, I don't know that you could have used it. But, or I mean, that it would have mattered, because to me, like, the entire election was about, it was a turnout election. It was which could get their side out.
But even the New York Times podcast, the reporter said, well, our argument wasn't as persuasive as their argument.
There was no argument to make against Donald Trump, because you were never going to suppress his supporters.
Because the argument was that he's an immoral person. But the thing is every American deep down, we're all amoral people. We're all sinners in the sight of God. We're all somewhere deep inside of us. Every man is Donald Trump. And you see these different pieces of yourself and other people, and you see them win, and you go, oh, I can. 2016 is the year that taught me that if you're a shit person, you get ahead faster than if you treat people with respect. Like, what kind of world are we? But that's the world, I guess.
I think that's a little bit, like, I do think that's a little bit harsh, because he's been very respectful since winning.
Totally agree.
Like, he plays the game as hard as he can and does literally every single thing he can to win, because that's all he cares about.
Right.
But it isn't like he has gloated. He hasn't. His acceptance was talked about what a great opponent she was.
Right.
I mean, he has shown class at every act, even telling his supporters to stop, knock it off.
Right.
So he has the willingness to play the game like it should. He will play it. He'll find every rule. He'll find out what the rules of the game are and go right up to the edge of them and even flirt with crossing them in order to win, because winning's that important to him.
Right.
You know, what he wants to do, what his agenda is, he didn't care how he won.
Right.
It is irrelevant. Yeah. He just had to win.
Can you sit here and tell me how LBJ beat Barry Goldwater? Can you
just and like that is the thing, like, that I, and especially to make this relevant for libertarianism, like, at a certain point we just have to win.
Right.
We can't care about what our base cares about, because great, 243 people showed up that day to vote, awesome, I'll take 10,000 that aren't party members. You know what I mean? Like, we just can't care what the minority thinks at all, and that's great. We can't pass it. The world doesn't rely on handing out signs anymore. The world doesn't rely on calling on precinct committee chairman.
Right.
That is an antiquated view of how to get turnout. You find a group of people that aren't being advocated for, given the context of the situation, and you be their advocate, and you tailor your message to it, and you create an angry mob. You stoke the flames. And if you're worried about how you're going to be perceived or what people are going to think about you, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You're going to be everybody's favorite second choice and well thought of. You know, it'd be like your exchange with Evan Bayh. You know, libertarians have some really interesting things to contribute. That's great. We don't get invited to any of the policy discussions.
Sure.
We're well thought of by all, contributed, donated to, and voted for by none.
Gary Johnson was everybody's second choice.
Oh, I really like Gary.
Mm-hmm.
Great. That's great. I'm glad he was well thought of. Now, are you going to vote for him? I'm just afraid of Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm just afraid of Trump.
Yeah. And it's because he tried to be the good guy in the room. The other problem that libertarian candidates have is that they run a campaign for themselves. They run a campaign for libertarians.
It's self-affirmation.
Because they think that's going to activate more libertarians. The problem is you are running a campaign. Joe Houtman put it perfectly this past weekend, Indiana State Libertarian Chair. We have to start running candidates that speak to voters and the issues that voters care about. First and foremost, economics. Hillary violated the rule of James Carville. It's economics, stupid. Barack Obama was elected because of economics. He didn't deliver. So those people voted for Donald Trump because they think he can, because Hillary's economic policies were Barack Obama's and they failed. It's all about, do I feel poor? It has nothing to do with, is Donald Trump racist? It's, do I feel poor? Does this person believe in freedom? Has this person ever read the Knapp? Do you know one voter who isn't a libertarian who knows what the Knapp is? Well, it's about educating them on the nonviolence principles. I don't disagree, but that's not what voters care about. This is politics.
And the only reason it's even a part of the damn party is because we did it so we weren't a radical group to the federal government. It wasn't part of the founding ideology. They created it so the federal government would leave us the hell alone and not label us as like a heretical radical organization. So it isn't like it was adopted for convenience. So get off your high horse.
Right. It's and so many candidates, as Joe said, run where you have to adopt the entire ideology. You have to, if you want to vote for this candidate, you have to believe in the libertarian philosophy. When most people don't know what that means, like the what we read
there
earlier.
There isn't one. It's diverse. You know, there's 10 million different strains.
Right. When you read that, when we read that article earlier, or the note from the listener, who's basically saying, like, he couldn't really, he could identify people. Darone and Richard, he could identify kind of the episode and kind of the main topic of what we persuaded him on, general themes, but he didn't tell you about the policy points and how that moved people towards liberty. He's learning it in bite-sized podcasts for 2 or 3 hours a week.
It's a slow boil, and it's you know, it's you just keep working, and you know that's the thing though, is like, you know, you have. Every race, I'll give you a perfect example. Right now in 2018.
Blacks?
Huh?
What?
What? Check
race?
Check your epidermal privilege.
Oh, okay. You meant like the 2018
election. 2018 Indiana Senate race, right? Okay. So we just elected, so Joe Donnelly's a Democrat in Indiana who's a Republican in any other state. The only thing that he's a Democrat on is on blue collar trade protectionism. So he's basically a Donald Trump Republican.
Right. So Donald Trump Democrat.
Yeah. What, if there's a difference anymore.
Right. Joe Donnelly's a Democrat.
Right.
Who basically agrees with everything Donald Trump says.
Right. And so then you're going to have a Republican opponent. The Republican opponent is going to be literally the same. He's going to be a white male. And he's going to be literally the same except for that issue.
Yeah.
It's going to be, he's going to talk about being more small government than Joe Donnelly is.
Right.
That means that there is there's a wide open election for a woman who talks about women's issues, who talks about being pro-choice, and who talks about, in an era of anger, we need love and toleration.
Yeah.
And instead, I'm sure what we'll end up doing is running a white male who is indistinguishable and will be everyone's second favorite choice in that race, and we will get 3, at best case, 4.
Right.
But that's the point, is that this person, you know, their views will align with what we usually do. Oh, well, you know what? Everyone kind of likes that. You know what? The hell with it. I don't care about pro-choice.
Yeah.
You want to talk about abortion? You either believe it's murder or you believe that it's a parasite-host relationship.
Right.
And if you're a libertarian, I can justify it either way. Life has to come before liberty, or you can't tell someone they have to have a host. They have to host someone that isn't independent on their body, their personal property.
Sure.
I can make the logical argument either way, and I'm totally agnostic to it and don't care. It's whatever the election dictates means getting more votes. It's about winning, caring enough to win. Because that is when you care enough to explore every nook and cranny of winning, every nook and cranny, that's when a voter is going to say, damn, this person really is an advocate.
Greg, can you tell me what was in the 1912 platform of the Socialist Party as run on by Eugene Debs?
Make America great again?
Right. How many things that Woodrow Wilson did can you name?
He created the League of Nations, and he was a racist that showed a birth of a nation in the White House.
Started a war. But that's my point. Everybody knows who Woodrow Wilson is, and they can name 3 or 4 things that he did.
None of them bad.
And you know what? He agreed almost wholeheartedly with Eugene Debs, the third party candidate. And he didn't win. And you don't know who Eugene Debs was. He was born in Terre Haute. He's actually a figure that libertarians should know a little bit about. And he moved.
He died here, right?
He ran for president several times. He was actually imprisoned by Woodrow Wilson's.
He wouldn't create a non-aggression principle for the government, so he got imprisoned.
Yeah, he was outspoken against the World War I, the First War, and went to prison. And I think he died in prison or shortly after he was imprisoned. But he was a guy who spent years as the top of the Socialist Party, and he is a guy that moved the Democrats and really the progressives, because we're kind of at that moment where we just elected the first populist ever. Like, Donald Trump isn't a Republican or a Democrat. He's a third-party candidate in a lot of ways.
He's Ross Perot.
As Joe Donnelly is, you know, to Donald Trump, it doesn't matter the party label and ideology, they're very similar. You know, we had, who was the silver guy in the, Williams Jennings Bryan. You had Williams Jennings Bryan. He didn't make it. He didn't get elected. Very powerful person, but not elected. You don't really remember who he is. You had Eugene Debs, part of a populist movement, didn't get elected. You had Huey Long, didn't get elected, didn't really carry it very far because he got assassinated. You know, Teddy Roosevelt in 12 is a third party candidate. He is a third party movement. He didn't get elected. You had George Wallace in 1968. His run was stopped by being assassinated. He lived. He got shot. Donald Trump is that populist, progressive.
Teddy Roosevelt.
In certain ways, he's more. He's very much a classic progressive in the Teddy Roosevelt model. Yeah, you're right. Like, if you look at what they care about, because the modern progressive is so far socialist.
they're not progressing towards anything other than outrage and safe spaces.
Right. So Donald Trump really is that first third party type populist to win an election. Like, it's actually pretty historic and unprecedented in American history.
Yeah, and you know, and the difference was, you know, he did it by basically, we said a different term, like, for what he did to the party. They basically cucked the Republican Party and said, no, I'm the captain now.
look at me. Yeah. I'm president now.
Right.
He shitposted right into the White House. Right. It's amazing.
And there's this entire party, and he's like, yeah, your entire history and your platform and what you guys believe, don't worry about that stuff. Trust me.
I'll listen to you. I may or may not agree later. I'll say something now that you like. I may do the exact opposite when I'm elected. It doesn't matter.
And you're going to sit there and you're going to take it, or else I'll go batshit insane from the bully pulpit.
Right.
You know, that's the thing, is though, he cares enough that he will explore every nook and cranny, and that's why he was able to do it.
Every senator cheating on his wife right now with a young male page is
living
bullet.
In fear.
Yep.
Denny Hastert would have hung himself if he was under a Trump.
100%.
Because he doesn't care, because he cares enough to play the game. This is what we need to do. This is the agenda. And the thing is, the reason that you don't have to fear anything, or at least I don't believe you do, is because he's entirely beholden into what his voters are going to think of him that got him elected. If they abandon him, it will crush him the same way Hillary Clinton is crushed. He is their knight. He is their knight in shining armor. And like, that's a Trump by, or a poll by the Washington Post today just came out. It isn't about right or left for Trump supporters.
Yeah.
They were shocked to discover that there's almost no political ideology behind his supporters. They just see him as the advocate, the great moderate that is going to thrash, hit, kick, scream, and fight until people come together and break gridlock, and then will leave.
They literally just want to destroy Washington.
They do, but they also know that gridlock can't be done by anyone on the right or left.
Yep.
It cannot be broken by an ideologue or even anyone that's controlled by their party.
And this is really why I see he's a problem for libertarians, the Libertarian Party specifically, because he's stolen their argument right from out from under them. And he is the
change. You can't take over a party from the inside. We just watched him cuck an entire group right. of cuck-servatives.
Yeah, I mean, it is...
And he remade it in his own image.
It'll be interesting to see what if he appoints somebody like John Bolton, that's just such a no-go.
But that's such vintage Trump. The most awful, despicable person to set expectations, and then he'll pick someone way different.
So I'm just interested to see how he picks people and where he goes. I look at it and I go, okay, we have a real shot to decrease the power of Washington, D.C. We basically, I started watching Designated Survivor last night, which started off rough, but it got better. He's basically that. He blows up the Capitol building. So I'm interested to see where he goes. I'm certainly not putting on the Trump hat, but I mean,
infrastructure is going to be key.
Yeah.
Infrastructure will be key because that'll put blue collar workers to work immediately. You know, it's the same idea as President Obama's stimulus package. You know, you fill that drop in demand where people can't go and learn skills and they have to sit out of the labor market for a year while they learn them.
Yeah.
You know, you fill that gap. And we have a decrepit national infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it's a thing where it's libertarians, we'd say that's fine, let's let it fail. Well, as soon as a bridge falls in Minnesota and people fall into it, into a river, libertarianism is going to be a tough sell for a very long time.
Yeah.
If we adopt that, you know, that messaging. And so his goal is going to be to renovate, put people to work at, you know, $16 to $18 an hour jobs through the federal government or through contractors that right now are making 9 to 11 after being laid off from their manufacturing job.
Mm-hmm.
And then he will adopt tax reform because the economy is already starting to come back. And he will want to be, if he doesn't have something in place, if it comes back, he has to be credited with it. Mm-hmm. And so he has to get out of in front of it.
It's all, like what he was saying to me yesterday. Woody goes, you know, hell, I worked in the restaurant industry in the 70s and 80s, and it was awful managing people because they just look at me and say, I'm not doing what you say. Fuck you. I can find a job in 5 minutes if I want. And they could.
They did. So all of a sudden, employers have to up their ante.
And he said, you know, so I'm in my 50s, and I remember that era, and then all of a sudden, now all the Mexicans came in and took all those jobs. I look at my dad's business. My dad runs a janitorial company. My dad employed white trash in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And then in the late 90s, he had to switch to something else because janitorial work was no longer tenable if he didn't hire illegals. And so he lost all those bids to a company that hired illegals. And that guy eventually got protested by the SEIU and wrote a book about it. But he, you know, my dad is a great example of somebody who's been directly affected. And now my dad at 60 years old is working 7 days a week and doing backbreaking labor because the business that he had
evaporated
under him. And so I'm sitting there and it really clicked for me with Woody yesterday because I thought, you know what? All those people who are my dad's age, 50, to, you know, 45 to 65, they grew up in a different world than we did.
Completely.
And they now see that world as totally different.
And they've lived through, I mean, that's the thing, is it's the easiest thing in the world to do is to discredit wisdom.
Right.
What do they know? They've been around forever. Old people are the worst.
They ruined
the
country.
Boomers need to be put on an ice floe.
Right.
Yet they've got experience.
Sure.
You know, that's one thing I love about the political philosophy of conservatism is it says, you know, the institutions that exist in a society, the government, political parties, even down to the cultural institutions, are a result of the best thinking from an era gone past. And then reform is the agent that whittles away the unnecessary parts that are no longer capable of dealing with our current situation.
Right.
And so, you know, you look at what they've experienced and you say they lived through the collapse of American competitive advantages and economic, you know, power.
Right.
And so they see that they watched illegal immigration be not an issue of cultural change, but of economic change.
Yeah.
It priced out a group of people who used to be able to enter the labor force with just a high school degree or, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit of high school completed through a connection. And now they are completely priced out of the American economy, and the business owners have every incentive not to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you say, all right, they can't articulate it that way.
Who wants to hire white trash?
Right. They don't want to worry about, you know, they would literally worry about different things than they have experienced with the people they've decided to replace them with. And they're incentivized. They don't, it's go out of business or hire illegal labor with Social Security numbers that can be verified.
Yeah.
It's a government created black market because it's a mismatch because of regulations instituted by the federal government.
All of it is government created. We purposely drafted trade agreements that flooded American capital into third world nations to rise their poverty level.
And to keep them there instead of coming here for jobs.
Sure. And
that was the original goal in NAFTA.
Right. And so what it did is it evened the playing field. And so it made
over-incentivized moving
exactly
manufacturing there because their currencies were cheaper. It never took into account currency manipulation.
Right. So Donald Trump it's not about the dreamers. It's not about these kids crying. And you're going to see so many of these kids crying in the middle of the streets. And I already have, you know, I'm going back and blah, blah. So it's not about that. And he's not going to send those people back. I firmly believe that Donald Trump is not actually going to do that because, again, it goes back to your principle of him being a pragmatist. It is bad press in a very negative way that would get his people feeling something for these people if he sent non-criminal kids back to places that they didn't grow up.
Right.
the people who are the rapists and the murderers and the 2 million people that Rob claims are illegal.
And it's like he's
killers.
Already scaled it back. He's going to keep deportation levels at the exact same level as President Obama,
which is the highest in the nation's history.
He's the great deporter in chief.
Right. He has deported 3 million.
Yeah.
I think it was a Bush 2.
And then Trump's looking at scaling it back to 2.1 for only the, you know, what is it? I forget what the, so it'd be level C or it'd be class E felonies and above.
Right.
And now you can make the argument like an illegal criminal is pretty funny because they're here illegally.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's not worried about that. You know, he's beholden to the people he's the advocate for. If they start getting feelings for, you know, watching families being broken up, he will do an about-face faster than you've ever seen.
Elian Gonzalez, for instance.
Right.
For those of you old enough to remember that.
And what will happen, though, is the left will manufacture a narrative. And I don't know if you remember the Kuwait War. There was a girl that was brought before Congress to testify what was going on in Kuwait at the hands of the Iraqis. It was Naria. It was in 1990, and she testified before Congress. Or before a congressional delegation, and it turned out to be the daughter of someone in the United Nations because she wouldn't give her last name during the testimony, and it was used as propaganda in order to get us into the Iraq War, Operation Desert Storm.
Right.
And it's public record, and you can watch it, and now she's an advocate for, I'm sure, for human trafficking, probably. And so she talked about how the Iraqi army came into Kuwait and took the babies out of incubators and then just left them to die. And that was the testimony that was used in order to create public sentiment for invasion of Desert Storm.
It was actually one of the, if you've ever seen Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
It was actually one of the inspirations for that book/movie. Yeah, which is a great movie, and it's a great movie showing you the propaganda tools that are used.
And there'll be one on the left for the deportation squads.
Of course. We're already seeing, like, that's why I don't believe, I'm not saying that there aren't actual racist incidents. I'm not saying that there aren't people who are being victimized.
Well, you know where this whole Muslim registry thing comes from?
Where?
It isn't from Trump. It's from the head of the Great America Pact, Bigby.
Yeah.
He said in an MSNBC and Fox interview that there was justification for such deportation squads and camps and a registry for watching them based on World War II and the internment camps. So it isn't from Team Trump. It's from someone at Great America PAC.
Which is what?
That is a super PAC that, you know, went around. They helped Trump win because they're a Republican super PAC.
Ah.
But so it wasn't for anyone from Team Trump.
So they're assigning it to Trump.
Because of his dialogue, and he hasn't disavowed it.
Exactly. And that's such a common tool in politics today where it's like, well, I read on this blog that Trump, people want to rape all Mexicans.
Well, it's like Bannon.
Mr. Trump hasn't said what this conservative blog that is read by 100 people a day said. So, like, it's so stupid. And you're seeing it with Bannon, too. And it's.
He said he didn't want to send his daughters to the Archer School because a lot of Jewish families, and he felt like their kids were whinies and they'd be victims.
Right.
They'd be entitled because they were wealthy. He didn't want to send them to a private school. If this even was an actual quote, because his wife that charged him with assault ended up being thrown out of court, is the same source.
Yeah. It's just all, there's so much propaganda going on right now, and that's flat out what it is. And I hate saying this because it sounds like this whole podcast I'm sticking up for Trump, but it's just the truth. Like,
he's not a monster.
Right.
There's no need to have a group cry.
You're actually, and it just really pisses me off because if I didn't believe in personal responsibility, I'd feel bad for these college whiners. But the left and the Hillary Clinton campaign and media have overhyped him to a point in an effort to drive turnout in their races that it now has people feeling incredibly scared. And it's emotional manipulation and gaslighting that is so inappropriate.
And it's their tool of shame that doesn't work anymore. He's the first presidential candidate that can smile, "You called me a racist? I don't care."
Right.
And that's always been the tool, is the manipulation of the American voter through shame.
They don't want to rise to the occasion and get better. They want to get rid of the Electoral College.
Right. You know, they want to turn it into a direct mob democracy. And like, what's going on, what's happening right now in America is the same thing that's happened through all of society. You know, rapid change creates an, you know, a rabid force. In the French Revolution, the Reign of Terror, Robespierre, Jacobin Society, the people just flat out did not care. You know, I believe it was called, I want to say tritium or trorium or whatever was the phrase, and it was a Tremorian reaction. And what that is that there's just such this anger, and the response is devoid of an ideology or a purpose. It's just a hellish punch back
right.
against people. And what ends up happening, though, is no society can maintain that fervor forever. Mm-hmm. And so eventually they just get tired, and it ends up being more docile, and people get behind all this negativity and the hate, but they need a victim.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is the left is becoming the scapegoat for a lot of anti-Americanism and a lot of blaming for white America. And right now for the people that were already closest to being unrestrained, now they do feel licensed, and that's where you're going to see a lot of the media flow to.
Yeah. So, and that's part of what scares me is, what if Trump's not successful, and what happens with that, with his crowd? Because then it's a hopelessness that is another, they end their lives disenfranchised.
Or they demand equal outcomes.
Yeah.
In the form of Bernie.
Right. So, you know, and that's why the Electoral College, you know, just, I was looking at this meme that I found somewhere. Donald Trump won 3,084 out of 3,141 counties in America's heartland, yet there are people who believe those remaining 57 counties should dictate the fate and future of the entire United States. We have the Electoral College because we are a slow system designed to cool the passions of the people. 8 years ago, we swung left. 8 years later, we swung right. And the point of the Electoral College is to accurately represent the people of the United States, not the voters of the United States. And so while the Electoral College is representing older white conservatives, that's not necessarily the makeup of the millennial generation. And so it will swing back, you know, it may be mostly blue in 50, 60, 70 years. So
it's blue now. Trump's blue.
Right.
You know, there isn't some right-wing reactionary, like, response. Right. Trump, without the language, is a Democrat. He's left of Bill.
Red and blue is an outdated paradigm, I would agree, but I'm just trying to use that as a point, that those blue population centers that you see in these maps would be disproportionately represented in a direct democracy. We don't have a direct democracy because of that reason. If you go back and read the 1912 platform of the Socialist Party, they are advocating for direct democracy, and they instituted it in places like California. And California, that's why they have so many referendums. Referendums usually pass because people want the free stuff. It's not the way that the system was ever designed. They moved the selection of senators from the general assemblies to the direct vote of the people, and so now you have a system that is totally gridlocked.
That's why you have Harry Reid and not Dick Lugar's.
Right.
Statesmen, and, you know, they replaced the Senate with politicians.
It's partisan. And so people who are for direct democracy bitch about how gridlocked the Senate is when it's their ilk, their predecessors, who ruined the representative democracy that we had already designed. But that's the right of the people. It's a republic if you can keep it. So the Electoral College, I don't anticipate that will be abolished, but
no.
But not anytime soon. So
I saw the Washington Post call for it, that states were a barbarous relic, the concept of states rather than just direct, you know, democracy. I mean,
was it an opinion piece or an editorial?
It was an op-ed, and It would be hilarious if the fact that the federal government was ineligible to be created except for the state's authority.
Right, the states created the federal government and not the other way around.
Right. And so you would dissolve the very nation states where you gain your authority from. Lysander Spooner all of a sudden becomes relevant, and you have no authority because your creators are gone.
Well, in the show that I was talking about, Designated Survivors, literally the only surviving government officials are the housing secretary and one Republican congresswoman, and everybody else died. And the governor of Michigan was like, F you, I'm in charge, which it's such liberal. I know too much about government, so watching it is like if you're a doctor watching ER, and I'm just like, really, the day after the entire government is blown up of the United States, they're worried about a Muslim teen being beaten to death in Michigan? I think they'd probably be worried about something other than, you know, the identity politics of the United States at that point.
How checks were going to clear, you know, right. What type of, you know, clearinghouse system was going to be used to verify digital payments.
But in the liberal, in the culture wars, essentially, we are being shown we need to be sensitive towards Muslims the day after the entire government blew up. Like, that wouldn't even be a concern. It's so irritating. So, all right.
They already, and especially if it was in Michigan, that's where Dearbornistan is. They already have an entire culture and system of society they've built, right. That exists outside U.S. law.
Those people in Dearborn don't need the government to protect them. Those people in Dearborn would rise up as a culture, as a local community, and beat the shit out of the racist people that are coming in. That's how systems work in human beings. Like the idea that the President of the United States, the day after the entire government has been abolished, needs to protect those people in Michigan.
What does it say about us as a society that after societal collapse, our first instinct isn't to go around protecting those who have the least capacity to protect themselves?
Oh, so silly.
We are a devilish people, and your vote for Trump is abhorrent, and you're Hitler.
FYI, the president was a Democrat. The Michigan governor who allowed the state police to beat up the Muslims, a Republican.
Shocking.
I know.
Plot twist.
Again, propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. You've got to pay attention to what you are being fed. And the only way to understand it is to get multiple sources. So you've got to look at it from all angles. And then once you do, you start to see the bullshit that you are fed on your TV shows, your movies, your media. And,
you know how many screenshots I've faked? Every time these people show screenshots on Facebook, and it's like floods of love and hugs coming to you. Like, you know, Snapchats I have of Spangle that are completely fake that I could just create an entire community of love for Spangle by showing how awful I've been to him through fake Snapchats.
You could completely control public opinion. You control.
We're in the wrong business.
We're in the right business if people will pay us for it. Yeah. So if any of you Bannons out there are listening, we need a libertarian Bannon. No, but people like Rob's dad think that I'm a seventh grader.
Yeah.
And it's not because of anything I post. It's because of the memes that you and Aaron and other people post of me.
My first one in a while was the Alex Jones one last night about Muncie.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, you have stopped making Spangle memes.
I emboldened the rabid mob.
I know.
On the Trump effect.
And I really wish you'd get back involved and start doing it again, because my life was much better when you were making memes about me and not amateurs. So you need to clear the field for me, because you're hurting my love life.
It's hard to stand out now.
It is.
You know?
No, trust me. You stand out.
Shit memes become the standard.
It's a lot of shit memes. If I see a Canadian joke one more time.
Yeah.
All right, kids. This has been a long episode. I think we're all over like 3 hours at this point.
We lectured the SJWs enough for one night.
Yeah, we're
the grumpy old men.
It's so funny because like somebody listening to this be like, oh my God, they're like Republican alt-right Trump supporters. But if you go back and listen to 160, they're like, oh my God, those people are like total Bernie bros. And that's how libertarianism works, kids. You go from one extreme to the other just because you're in the middle saying what is right and what is the truth, and trying to stand up for people who don't have a voice themselves. So that's why we're doing what we're doing. We need you to share the podcast. We need you to donate. We need you to just get involved in our community. Please, at the very least, share with your friends the podcast. Tell people to listen to us. Please, that's the very least you can do. If you want to get in touch with us on WeAreLibertarians.com, I've added my profiles and his profiles, so you can go and connect with us personally on Facebook. Connect in our Facebook group. Facebook is where we do the most of our connecting.
Send me a grammar correction. You're going to the Muslim registry regardless of whether you worship Allah.
If you're a grammar Nazi, especially a meme grammar Nazi, when I share a meme that I didn't make and somebody corrects the grammar in the meme, I delete that person immediately.
You're going to OCD camp.
I don't care if it's my grandmother. Sorry, Granny. You're going back. So, all right.
Thanks. I don't care about the matriarch of our family. I will break this family up because you're one of those OCD bastards.
You've lived 88 years. It's time. And, all right. So, final thoughts for this episode.
No, I think it was comprehensive. It was long and kind of meandering, but we found our way back, and it was fun.
Yeah. All right, so this is the new world that you live in. It's not that scary. It's all going to be fine. It's actually fun. So
it was there before. You just didn't pay attention.
Exactly. So get in there and start participating in the great meme war of 2017. All right, we will be off next week for Thanksgiving.
We're not giving thanks?
No. No.
We're not thankful for anything?
I'm sure that, Lions of Liberty or somebody will do a How the Pilgrims Were Socialist podcast or something. So they can fill the void. I'm tired.
Yes.
So I don't know about you, but I'm just exhausted.
Yes, it has been a hell of a run.
Yes.
And I look forward to the future drama of the outrage on the manufactured outrage of the left, the transition problems there always are, and wait till we do our episode about his inauguration speech. Picture him on the steps of the...
It's going to be so beautiful.
The LGBTQ community.
I just want to be a president for everyone.
Well, the level of rhetoric will be so shockingly different than the president's.
It is amazing how everybody on one side put down their signs, walked across the street, and picked up the other guy's signs, and they switched places within one day. Like, it is amazing how the Republican Party was dead, and the nation sucked. And Republicans were talking about how it was over for them and over for the country. And then the next day, America was great again. America couldn't have been better. There's hope on the future.
He saved the party.
Oh, yeah. There's without a doubt he saved the party. And then the very next day, Democrats went from the economy is great, 49 straight months of growth, everything is awesome, to the very next day, without ever having passed a policy, this is the worst country ever. Oh, my gosh.
China and Saudi Arabia are dropping their treasury bills at record paces. It's going to cause a debt crisis.
It's not even that. It's like my friends who are... I'm so scared for them. I haven't slept in two nights. As a woman, I'm so afraid.
Overturn the election electoral college. Do democracy a favor.
Listen, I get that Donald Trump is... He signals to, I think I was really one of the first people to articulate this. He signals to every woman who has been through an encounter with a man that is scary, uncomfortable, or violating. He has every single one of those signals for those women. So
he has an imposing nature about everything he does.
Yeah, so I totally understand why women are just very, very upset about him. I get it. I'm upset too. So,
but they're also projecting fear onto an individual they have nothing to fear
from. That has no real power over them whatsoever.
Because if that person were wronged while in Europe, he would just go ahead and nuke France and laugh until they did exactly what he wanted.
When you give... This is the danger of giving your power over to politicians. When they do something you don't like, then you are upset. Don't ever give your power away to the government or to politicians. Your emotional power, your economic power, your livelihood, your family power. So, all right. Thanks for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We appreciate it so much. Thank you for supporting us, and thank you for spreading the word about this great podcast. Even though, as always, we promise
to do better next time.
How are you doing today, Rob?
Doing great, Larry. How are you?
It's nice to meet you. It's been a pleasure. I've never done the radios before.
Larry, it is so great to have you with us. You are an American patriot. You were one You were one of the early supporters of Donald Trump. And I was thinking, who am I going to have on for Thanksgiving? Because we should have somebody we're thankful for. And I am thankful for you.
Well, that's a pleasure. That's so nice. I barely have anybody to go home to because my sister found out on election night she voted for Hillary.
I saw that. Now, for those who don't know, your name is Larry Daniels. You list yourself as American patriot. Is that right?
Yes, I'm on Facebook now.
Larry Daniels, you can search for Larry. Larry has his own page. You have fans. You have people that like your page.
It's pretty incredible, but I think it's all due to Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump has changed the game.
Now, tell us how and why you became a fan of Mr. Trump, because you were very early on talking about the dadgum illegals, right?
Listen, I don't work. I haven't been able to work in several years.
What happened? You got an accident, right?
I was in a car accident. I was driving to work because I'm a God-fearing American that knows how to draw a paycheck. And I was T-boned by an illegal.
How did you know it was an illegal?
He was Mexican. It's very clear to spot them. They're very easy to understand. You know, when you see them, he had no insurance.
That's a state law.
Right. When they come here illegally, they don't care about the law.
So is that why Mr. Trump spoke to you? Was his stance on building the wall and everyone having to go back?
Well, yes. The government's not efficient. I don't get my disability on time. It's always a problem. And I know that Mr. Trump, he personally came to me one night in a dream. And he said, Larry, I'm going to send them back, and I'm going to fix your disability. It's going to be great.
So you were part of the Citizen Action Committee that thousands of people, tens of thousands all over the Midwest, that decided they were going to speak out for Mr. Trump.
Well, it's true. There's very few people out there that supported Mr. Trump. I listen to your show religiously because I know that you're a great American and you support Mr. Trump.
Oh, I do. I love Mr. Trump. Got a chance to meet Mr. Trump. It was a great thrill.
What did he smell like?
Well, I didn't smell him. I also did not touch his hair, which is also a question I get asked very often.
Did you get to touch him?
I did touch him. We shook hands. There's a famous photo of me and Mr. Trump.
How big are his hands?
They're big. They're plenty big.
I heard he has no issues in that
area. He does not. He's a big guy. Very big guy.
Well, of course. He's the God Emperor.
Okay. So you start doing these videos, and everybody loves these videos.
Yeah. And I think it's because there's so many people out there that love Mr. Trump, but nobody's talking about him. It's Sean Hannity. It's Rob Kendall, and it's Steve O'Bannon. Steve O'Bannon and the Breitbarts, they get on there and they tell the truth. And there's so few people out there telling the truth. There's people that are out there lying about Mr. Trump, like Chris Spangle at We Are Libertarians. He's a fat liar.
Chris Spangle is a rotten, awful person.
He's a ginger.
Now, people like Spangle. His friend Greg Lenz was very supportive of Mr. Trump.
Such a good man.
He was very supportive. But people like Chris, they were very angry. They made up lies about Mr. Trump.
Well, he said that he went around and he was inappropriately grabbing, can I say, pussies?
If you're referring to cats, you're talking about cats?
Well, I think that's what he was talking about. Because I don't think Mr. Trump did all the things that they were saying. I think he might have been talking about kitties. Because he's married to Melania's. And Melania's is a very attractive woman. And she's not going to be with no man who cheats on her.
She's so beautiful, isn't she?
She's the most attractive female I've ever seen.
Again, our guest is Larry Daniels, American Patriot. You can find him on Facebook at Larry Daniels. They search you, like your page. Is that right?
Yeah. Did you get to meet Melania?
I did not. I did not get to meet anybody but Mr. Trump.
Oh.
They're very strict. They're very strict. Well, as you can imagine, everybody wants to meet Mr. Trump.
He's the Law and Order candidate.
He is. They're very strict. He was very nice. And, you know, I wonder if people like you, what election night was like for you? Because you were very, very passionate for Mr. Trump.
Well, I don't know if I should say this on the radio. I've never been married.
And what?
I'm a good Christian person, and I've never been with, you know, anyone. I bet it was sort of like that.
But you have your mother who lives with you, right?
Well, that sounds creepy. Don't make me sound creepy, but...
No, I think it's great you take care of your mother.
Well, my mother takes care of me. After my disabilities, after the accident, someone had to bathe me, she gets my meals, and she also helps change the channel when the couch cushions falls between my... Well, between my gut and my leg.
Now, one of the big things you've done in these videos, and by the way, if everybody listens, Larry Daniels on Facebook, American Patriot, does these great video blogs. They're fabulous.
Thank you.
And I became a big fan. One of the things that you are excited about is President Trump is going to clean up Obamacare and the disability system.
listen, it's a tragedy what has happened in this country. We can't get disability checks out on time. We can't feed our soldiers right. And then he goes in there and he passes Obamacare and he steals insurance from everybody. It's outrageous what has happened. I just think that he's going to have to get rid of this Obamacare because that's going to fix insurance. It was so much better the way that it was before. Insurance worked. It was fine. Everybody had insurance.
Did you have insurance?
Well, I have Medicare. So, you know, that's I guess, sort of insurance. I don't quite know how it works when it does. That's a joke. It's fine. Don't cancel me.
Larry, we've got to wrap it up here because we do have a guest after you. You're not the only guest I'm thankful for.
I'm so glad that I get to open for somebody. This is so exciting.
You are the opening. You're actually the opening for Nicole, who hosts the dance party Saturday nights on WYRZ. So we're going to be talking about that next.
Does she have a suitor?
She's married. Has a couple kids.
Well, that's good. I respect a good Christian family like Nicole's.
Okay, so let's close with this. What do you expect to see from the first 100 days of President Trump?
Well, I have so much time to sit around and think about this. I think he's going to repeal Obamacare.
He's going to reveal it or repeal
it? Repeal it.
He's going to repeal it.
Listen, he's going to send them back. He's going to build the wall. The wall's going to be done in 100 days. And don't tell me it can't be because he's a contractor.
He knows how to build things.
He builds things, and they're beautiful. Just like the wall's going to be beautiful. And if you people quit crying about it, it's going to be 10 feet higher. So he's going to send them back. He's going to build the wall. He's going to repeal Obamacare. He's going to cut taxes. He's going to kick Michael Moore's out of this country. He's going to close down the press. That failing New York Times is going to go out of business. And it's going to be so great. America's finally going to get back to when it was good.
Larry? Yes. Such an honor to have you.
Can I come back?
You absolutely can come back. You're welcome anytime.
Do you have Thanksgiving dinner?
You're welcome. I'm sure my girlfriend Haley, she would love to have you at our house for Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, I have. We're going to Gray's Cafeteria at 3, so if I can come over and eat and get out before we go to Gray's, that'd be good. Okay,
absolutely.
What's your favorite kind of pie?
Pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie is delicious. I like a good coconut cream pie. Coconut cream pie is good because it's got the crunchies on the top, but then it's super creamy in the middle. But it's also like that. I don't know what that stuff is called. Is it marshmallows?
I don't know. I've never had a coconut cream pie.
It's pretty good. What do you get when you go to Gray's?
Larry, we do have to wrap this up. I don't mean to.
Well, that's good. So what is Haley having over at her Thanksgiving?
Larry, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks.
We really appreciate it. You can find him on Facebook, Larry Daniels, American Patriot. Check out his video blogs. They're great.
I like to get on there, and I'm doing these blogs because I'm supporting Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump is going to change this country for the better. It's going to be so great. He's going to send him back, Rob.
Absolutely. Larry, thanks for being with us today.
Is everything okay with your eye?
Everything's great. Had a little incident with the Hillary Clinton supporter, but it's okay. Thank you for being with us.
You're lucky to be alive. You were for Mr. Trump. She's going to kill you. Did you hear she's a cannibal?
We've got to go, Larry. Thank you for your time. We really appreciate
it. All right. Help me lift my chair into the car and let's get over to, is it Hillary?
Haley.
Are you dating? Okay.
Yes, Haley's house. We're going to go to Haley's house. Larry, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. So I appreciate you having me on today. It's so nice of you. You're just so sweet. You're a nice boy. If I were into boys, I might be. Never mind. That sounds sort of weird. So anyways, go to my website, facebook.com/LarryPatriot/ I think that's it. Are you still here? Rob, are you okay? Is your eye acting up? Is it getting twitchy? I can give you some of my fibromyalgia pills.
Hi, this is Chris Spangle. Can you hear how good I sound? I sound great.
And you know why? It's because listeners like you go to wearelibertarians.com/wishlist and you help us purchase new equipment. And then we take that equipment and we hook it all up and then we sound really good. And the only thing that can possibly go wrong is if I forget to hit record one more time. So, if you want us to help... If you want us to... Listen, getting new equipment isn't going to make everything better. There's still going to be problems with people like me and talking into the microphone. But you can make us sound really good as we're messing up by going to wearelibertarians.com/wishlist and purchasing an item today. It helps us grow, it helps us do more, and it helps us make sound better. Make sound better? That doesn't even mean anything. Well, I'm still not giving up, and I hope you weren't either. So please, wearelibertarians.com/wishlist. Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at wearelibertarians.com.